Going as an alternative.
Will now be recorded.
Good morning, everyone, commissioners and staff and guests. Welcome to the final Audit and Budget Committee meeting of 2020, a year I think we're all ready to be over with. So I'm Ann Gass. I'm the Interim Chief Financial Officer, and we're here today to hear from our auditors about the fiscal year 2020 Housing Authority. This is the fiscal year that ended 3/31 of 2020. You're used to seeing this much earlier in the year, but because of COVID-19, we were granted some extensions. I mean, coming to you with this now, I want to introduce from Berman Hopkins, our audit team. And Brian, I'll introduce you and I'll let you introduce your team. So Brian Nemiroff is the head of this great team. They've been with us for several years now, and he and his team are going to give you some information about the audit. I hope you all received the email that I sent last night with some audit information, and they're going to take you through that, and we've allowed plenty of questions to answer questions that you may have. So Brian, let me hand it over to you and let you get started.
Thank you, Ann. I appreciate it. And we certainly appreciate the virtual meeting that we're doing. I know there's some technical issues and we're working through those, but keeping everyone safe and social distancing, you know, during the pandemic is important. Once again, I'm Brian Nemiroff, a partner with Berman Hopkins. A little bit of promotional advertising for the cameras at work. And we have with us Laura Ann Prey is another partner. She's muted right now. And then we have Sean Cedar, who's also muted. Sean, if you want to say hi, hopefully you guys can see them. So really, Sean does all the work. Laura Ann's another partner here with me to just make sure if something happened because of COVID or we needed some partner rotation, just putting, you know, two partners in charge because it's so technical in its nature at the review level. But really, it's Sean that does all the work and will have all the answers. And he also has three monitors at his fingertips if there's any questions during this presentation. I'm going to attempt to do some screen sharing. And we've already done a trial run here with it. And I have a little PowerPoint for you to facilitate the virtual presentation, and I'm going to start here. There we go. Can everyone see a little PowerPoint snippet? I might still be in a camera in a side window, but if, you know, everyone can really just see the PowerPoint, that's what's important. And can everyone hear me okay? Okay, very good. So just introduction and overview. The first thing I want to point out above, you know, introducing myself, Laura Ann, and Sean, is that the real point of the focus for today, the numbers that you're going to have is really just codified as of that year end, and it's March 31st, 2020. You can kind of think about blockchain. We hear all about that. This is really just kind of archiving your year of activity and putting it in a binder, putting it on a shelf, and kind of sending it to HUD for their approval and kind of locking it away. But we know you're ongoing. You're consistently ongoing in your operations. But the year end is just a 12-month increment that we try and lock it in. The numbers that I'm presenting today, that the team, Laura Ann and myself, it's as of March 2020. So unrestricted fund balance, net position, just keep that in mind. It's for the year ended. So it's really April 1, 2019 to March 31, 2020. You're well into the fiscal year for 2021. Another key point about that 12-month period, it's really before COVID. You know, well, COVID-19 happened, but you did not get CARES Act funding until really after March 31st. You only spent about $600 in the year. So this does not really reflect the impact of additional funding and programmatical changes. I do have a slide, and we'll talk about that. But essentially, the numbers are not going to be in there this go around. The audit is also financial as well as compliance. It's very important that we understand that it's not just the numbers. You're getting HUD funding, and we have to issue a report on major programs in that regard. And hang on. It also includes all programs blended component units and operations. For our reporting, we really have to give you one opinion where everything is combined in a governmental framework. So it's a little misleading because your numbers are so big and it's one opinion on that top side.
Brian, just because some of the terminology may be new to folks, can you just define blended component units for HACCA?
Yeah, sure. I don't think I have a detailed slide, so I'll do that. So if HACCA was going to enter into a non-federal program, if the board was to take an initiative, we would really just call that business activities, going out and buying something in your name, non-HUD funding, collecting rent, and so forth. We would just call that a business activity. But when you enter into legal documents and contracts, you're creating a new legal entity, and that would be a potential component unit. If it's a separate legal entity, such as SHCC, such as Austin Affordable, such as Blueprint, as well as a lot of your general partners that are, you might own 100% but have a small interest in joint ventures with other partnerships. All of that business activities is being merged with your Section 8 program, with your public housing program, and it's really one opinion. So blended component units is a significant impact of HACCA's operations. When you convert public housing to RAD, you're creating a component unit, if you will, in that relationship because it's a separate legal entity. SHCC, by far, and Austin Affordable are really your biggest two that are on the radar. Blueprint, Austin Pathways, and a couple other ones are a little bit smaller on the blended side. Good question. I wanted to point out that all of that has to be reported from an accounting standpoint under GASB. GASB writes accounting standards for counties, towns, transportation authorities, school boards, anything like that is really in a government framework. Housing authorities just follow suit. In addition to all the HUD rules and regulations, we have to follow GASB, which we call GAAP, Generally Accepted Accounting Principles. These are three red areas that are auditing. I just wanted to highlight that. I have another slide that's going to go into it. It's a little confusing, but there's the basic audit standards. All audits have to do. Then there's government audits because you're having taxpayer dollars. And then because you're getting federal funds, we're giving another opinion on your major federal programs. Really direct and material compliance areas on those major federal programs. So the three levels of reporting that we have, the AICPA, American Institute of CPAs, is the basic. And that's really the numbers and the notes. Then because you have taxpayer dollars, level two, government audit standards come into play. Think of this as fiduciary responsibility and a stewardship responsibility you have over taxpayer dollars. Those audit standards are written by the GAO, the Governmental Accounting Office. They're the ones that do the audit for HUD. They do the audit for the federal government. By the way, the opinion for HUD at the federal level is not a clean opinion. Because there's a lot of issues there. Like Department of Defense, when the GAO does the audit of the federal government, obviously there's a scope limitation because they can't get into those numbers. But the GAO writes the standards that we have to follow for that second level. The third level is by the Office of Management and Budget, and this is where we're giving an opinion on your federal programs. Controls and compliance have to be tested. So the first report is really the numbers. But controls and compliance, because you're a government agency, is really where we spend most of our time. And as a board member and HUD officials, that's really what they're looking at. Your numbers as of today are 9 months old, if you will. But your compliance is really what HUD is monitoring you for. This is an example of our table of contents. And I just wanted to point out those opinion levels 1, 2, and 3 are going to be buried in these reports. You don't have to pay too much attention to it, but you can see that the independent auditor's report at level 1 is really everything up to the notes of the basic. Then under the single audit section is where we have the compliance reports. I do want to point out, and I don't want to waste any time doing it, for all three of those reporting instances, we have what we call a clean opinion. So not only is it millions of dollars of numbers, but we were able to substantiate it and give you a clean opinion there. Fairly stated in all material respects is really what the opinion reads, and I just extracted that from the audit report to make it easy. This is an example of what reporting number 2 and 3 would look like. The highlighted part there is most relevant for you. You can take your time. The other thing is there's a one-page summary that recaps all of this. I want to go back to the table of contents if I can and just show you. I know this is where everyone gets worried. Oh, no, he's clicking buttons, especially Lorianne and Sean on my side. I highlighted the 1, 2, and 3 here for you, but the red boxes, I overlooked it. If you don't have the opportunity to read the whole financial statement, or if one of your associates or you know, as a board member, someone's asking you certain questions and you want to share the audit with them, management's discussion and analysis is going to be a brief overview of all the numbers compared to last year. It's written in layman's terms, and it should be an easy read. Should be just 10 pages at most. Schedule of findings and question costs down at the bottom is the one-page recap of all your opinions and conclusions. It'll say what the opinions were for each of those three reporting areas. I do have an example of that that I will show you here as well. So we've already covered this. This is your opinion on the numbers. Fairly presents fairly in all material respects. No control weaknesses or significant deficiencies. The results of our test disclose no instances of noncompliance. And then for each major federal program, you complied with the direct and material compliance areas for each of your major federal programs. This is Sean and I and Lori Ann testing tenant recertifications. Are you pulling people off the waiting list correctly? People that were given the opportunity to be housed came from the list. Were your disbursements allowable per the program? We might be looking at your disbursements for proper controls in the other reports, but when we get to that third report, we're looking for allowability for compliance. This is that schedule of findings and question costs. I numbered them 1, 2, and 3 that correlate with the opinion. The term unmodified used to be unqualified, and it would be like fairly stated in all material respects, comma, except for we didn't like fixed assets, or except for we didn't like cash. So we could modify the reports. You complied with all material respects except for tenant file recertification, hypothetically. And instead of saying unmodified here, it would be qualified because of that qualifying exception. So, again, schedule of findings is the one-stop shop. It's like a report card for you, and that would be an easy read. To find the opinions in all of the reports, we can highlight those for you, but it's kind of buried in those reports. So going into the numbers, I did want to mention again, this is as of March 31, 2020, you have $65 million in total of cash, most of which is restricted, primarily for modernization and development. And most of that is in Austin Affordable. If you think about Section 8, you might get funding in your HCV program 1 year that's different than the timing of your spending it, or 1 year you might spend more than you get. So you could have some change in net position in any given year, but essentially your HUD projects are break even. You're getting funding to cover your costs. They're not supposed to be making money. Having a housing authority with $65 million generally means you have a lot of restricted reserves for development activities through your blended component units, Austin Affordable in this case. I would also be remiss if I didn't point out that SHCC generates close to $8 to $10 million in any given year. and that increases your cash. That is earned administrative fees that is unrestricted, hence you're unrestricted in the 21 million category. I also want to point out here that I think it's really relevant. We're using the Government Accounting Standard Board definition, GASB's definition, which we're required to do, of restricted and unrestricted. Whereas HUD really considers your unrestricted restricted in the program it's in. So as an example, if HCV has administrative funds, that's unrestricted because you can use it for salaries, training, lights, computer. The HAP in HCV is only restricted for landlord payments for a qualified tenant. So HUD has different restriction categories above and beyond GASB. But essentially all of your money that's unrestricted, consider it programmatically restricted, unless it's in your blended component units or your business activities. If it's truly in a HUD program, it's really programmatically restricted. All right, very good. Also, yes.
Can we pause for just a second there on that last slide?
Yes.
Can you just to underscore for the board that of the $44 million that we have listed as reserve, a large portion of it, like three quarters of it, is the reserve for replacement that we have for our former public housing properties that have now converted to project-based rental assistance through RAD. So we have a healthy restricted cash reserve for the 20 years of improvements that we will make to those properties. I have to say it's important to observe that. And anything else you'd want to say, Brian, on the other remaining funds that are in that account?
Yeah. When you use HUD money in any form or substance, however it came to you, maybe replacement housing factor funds or certain capital funds were used in that regard. Maybe you created notes receivable, and it originated from public housing, or it originated with a HUD flavor, if you will, or I don't want to say taint, a HUD flavor that came across. It maintains that restricted nature. And as you look at your restricted assets, but essentially Mike is correct. It's modernization and development. Either you sold public housing and you got proceeds, or you entered into a tax credit deal from a public housing site and you received a prepaid ground lease. The money there is restricted for further development purposes, as Mike indicated. So you do have $65 million. Your unrestricted is pretty healthy, but it is that pre-funded, you're right, for modernization and development. And when Austin Affordable and Ron and his department want to go enter into a new deal, creating new units, some of this money might be restricted for that. So if you get a developer fee from any particular project, using that for other further developments is allowed in that category. So we're calling it restricted, but it's available for you for those purposes, which is your initiatives. Very good point. Mike, thank you.
Brian, I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
This looks good to me, and I'm happy about it, but I'm still nervous a little bit. Hopefully my nerves will be allayed on January 22nd. Mm. But, you know, HUD has this whole cash management rule out there, and basically they want us to spend all our reserves first before mm-hmm. we would mm-hmm. receive additional funding from them for, you know. And so I guess, can you talk a little bit about the interplay between that and then the healthy reserves that we have, and is there any real risk?
Yeah, let me elaborate on that. And this is nothing new. HUD has, obviously, I mean, if we look at the big picture, the federal government is in a deficit. They only have certain appropriations they can allocate to all federal departments. You know, whether it's being cut in children and families or education or transportation, HUD is getting its share of budget cuts. Within HUD, they have multiple programs. You're referring primarily to the HCV program where they used to give it to you based on your, you know, utilization, and there's all kinds of tools and forecasting. And HUD is, instead of giving it and then looking at recapturing, they're limiting what they're giving to you only based on your needs on the HCV program. In years past, you may have had up to $4 million in pre-funded restricted funds to be paid out in HAP, given the nature of the timing and the funding. Consultants, including us, back in the day, would be like, well, let's get it out of the restricted programs. Let's put it in your COCC. Well, now we're worried they might get it in the COCC. That is your central office cost center, which is supposed to be defederalized. But apparently an executive director took his family to vacation with those money and went to Hawaii and didn't realize it was still programmatically restricted and still, you know, reasonable and necessary as a state and local government. So then we're like, oh, HUD can now maybe recapture COCC. So then the concept is let's move it to business activities, one step further outside of the HUD. Well, you went beyond that. You created new legal entities in your Austin Affordable. The funding into SHCC and Austin Affordable is really unrestricted, removed from HUD programs in that regard. So there's a slide we're going to have a little bit later, and it's the funding you get from HUD that you really need to be concerned about them potentially recapturing it. If it's in business activities, HUD really cannot extend their arm that far. You could even argue they can't extend their arm into your business activities or into your COCC. I'm gonna not weigh in too heavily on that. Rules are always changing, but I think your COCC, based on the rules at the time, is truly unrestricted and HUD can't recapture it. But in your Section 8 funding, they might say, hey, use your reserves. I don't think HUD is gonna do an HCV allocation to you saying, hey, your Austin Affordable has some profit, so we're gonna cut a HUD program. I have not seen that happen.
Okay.
Does that answer your
question? I
know
that's a concern that I have, and I know Commissioner Bailey has kind of a similar concern.
I mean, there's always that concern because politics, Congress, federal deficit. But I can say in response to the CARES Act, and that's not even reflected in here because this is as of March 31, you got additional funding for CARES Acts. I'm getting ahead of myself, and I have a slide on that, but that's a very good question. Yes, go ahead, please.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. On the 21.6 million that's unrestricted, how do we hold that? Is it invested? What kind of accounts are it in? Is it in? Have we spread it out? Sort of, how's it held?
Yeah. Well, I'll have to dig into that specific work paper, and as I'm talking, Sean can dig into that, and there's a slide at the end for questions, and we can come back. But essentially all of the cash is following HUD rules and regulations of a very conservative nature in investments. You're not going to go out and buy shares of Coca-Cola, equity investments. You're going to be in cash funds, collateralized, secured if the banks go under, it's in your name. But you're also looking at your available cash and doing substantial reinvestment initiatives under Austin Affordable. And I'm sure Ron can talk a little bit more about that, but you're creating, and I didn't make a slide because it's just so large. You guys are invested in so many partnerships. I do have a recap of some of that. I'll get there, but you are wisely using your funds strategically. I don't think anything is at risk. If it is at risk, you're just not putting it at risk to get a return on your investment. You're creating housing, and you're creating more affordable housing, which is your initiative. There's a shortage of affordable housing. You're fulfilling that goal by creating units. If it costs you money, you're not really doing it for a return on that investment. Although I will say, you know, Mr. Gerber and Mr. Cowell, you know, in the strategic, you are getting prepaid ground lease money that's restricted, and then you're using it for further development. So it's kind of a gift that keeps on giving. I have another housing authority that does have a project-based contract administration, and they're earning, as SHCC has, earning $8 million or $3 million, you know, roughly for them. For you, it's about $8 million in administrative fees. If you use that $8 million for current operations, it's not the gift that keeps on giving. If you bank it and invest it into other partnership deals that gives you rent on a regular basis and creates affordable housing, you're wisely using your investments. Mike, Ron, is there anything you want to add to that? I know I kind of got – it's not like you guys are being invested in, you know, pork rinds on the West Coast or something. It's HUD-restricted investments, and you're following your cash management policy by taking it out of SHCC and using it for Austin Affordable initiatives.
Which we believe has always been the safer route.
I've got a question, Kevin. Mike, whenever you're finished – I mean, Brian, I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Chuck.
Mike, go ahead.
After you, go
well,
ahead.
Well, mine is similar. Mine is similar to Carl's. And it's sort of a two-part question. Initially, you said our audit is a one audit for everything. And is it like you go into audit a holding company and you audit all of the companies that are under that holding company? Is that sort of what you're talking about?
Well, we dive deeper, Mr. Bailey, into each particular area. HUD wants to see a supplemental schedule by department, if you will, right? Every AMP is listed there. Blended component units is its own column. Business activities is its own column. As far as HUD is concerned and monitoring, you know, they just want to see Section 8 or they want to see public housing. But it's GASB that says you're really one big enterprise fund from an opinion unit. And I think if I go through some of these slides, it might help you get there. These are really good questions. But it's one opinion unit. And then we have to give it in relation to opinion on the supplementary schedules that break it out. So one of them is your funding from HUD. One of them is that financial data schedule for HUD that is very large by program. And so you can see your total net income by bucket, by operational area.
Well, and then the second part of my question then is, if the funds that we're using and that are non-HUD funds, non-government funds, and they're run through our separate legal entities, our nonprofit entities, what difference does it make to HUD?
It doesn't. It doesn't. It shouldn't.
Well, then, I guess I'm not understanding. Then
oh,
when you
okay,
do
let me back up.
One-size-fits-all audit.
Yeah, that again, that's just
see where I'm kind of going.
Yeah, HUD really looks at two things in the audit: the audit opinions on compliance, and it's on the housing authority in total. But then they're looking at the financial data schedule that is programmatic. And REAC is really taking a closer look at that. And I didn't even put that on the slides that we have to report to because HUD years ago gave up their specific accounting guidelines and reporting guidelines and said, we are going to follow suit with the general accounting world. So now – when a college graduate with an accounting degree comes to work for us or comes to work for you, they might need some special training, but they should know 90% of it because accounting's accounting and that's what they learned in school. HUD was doing whatever they felt like in years past. So HUD, in order to conform with applicable guidance, And there's a lot of that. The single audit guidance with OMB says, hey, it's one audit that encompasses all your federal funds. Let's make it workable for entities that need to be audited and for the auditors that need to do it. It's real easy for you because it's all HUD, but imagine if you were a county or a childcare association, you're getting grant money from all kinds of different departments, right? Children and families, USDA for lunch programs, maybe an education grant for after school. If each one of those government agencies made their own accounting rules, it would be really hard to do an audit. So let's table that question.
I think I get that.
Okay.
Well, let me give you an example. Let me give you an example, and then I'll let it go.
Sir.
One of our wholly owned subsidiaries owns a shopping center. And let's assume we bought that, and I don't know, I don't remember what funds we used for that, but let's assume that we used private funds that we have earned from someplace else, non-government funds, non-HUD funds, to buy a shopping center.
Yes, sir.
Will that nonprofit legal entity be part of this audit?
It will. It will. But HUD cannot recapture it. And that's a very good example.
And you've explained that because of the account.
Yeah.
And so I understand the question, I mean, the answer about accountants. And so I get that. One of the concerns that I have periodically is that what we do is non-governmental and the liability that attaches to that. If you're telling us that HUD doesn't consider that a governmental activity, then what are we? Our lawyers say, don't worry about it, Chuck. You're still a governmental nonprofit. And because of your there you go. It's really not a corporate structure, but because of your governmental structure. So it just all ties in and gives me and Carl, as Carl mentioned a while ago, some concern.
Well, I think that the Housing Authority, by its definition, is a government agency, and
yes,
you're required to follow government reporting. However, within government reporting, towns and cities have a modified basis, a short-term basis, and a long-term basis, a lot of reconciliations for true taxpayer dollars, short-term, long-term. HUD took the initiative to treat Housing Authorities as an enterprise fund, which really makes it streamlined in the government reporting framework. So HUD really is trying to do everything they can in that framework. They really were pushed between a rock and a hard place. They have to conform with the GASBs. But the GASB, Government Accounting Standards Board, is walking around with a hammer trying to fix things that we didn't know were broken. To give you an example, the balance sheet used to be assets less liabilities equals net position. Well, now there's defined benefit plans that count as a deferred outflow or a deferred inflow. It's a credit or a debit, but it's not an asset or a liability. So assets less liabilities used to be net assets. Now we have to call it net position. And HUD had to accommodate on their financial data schedule these unique accounting items, debt and finance and inflows and outflows that are in the governmental world. But I don't see that HUD had a choice to embrace this financial framework. The audit now is so much easier than it used to be. It was back in 1999 and 2000 that HUD said, we're going to follow GASB and we're going to stop writing our own accounting rules. HUD now writes programmatic rules that you have to comply with. But let me go through the presentation. I think I'll answer your question a little bit better.
Okay, yeah.
And there are supplemental schedules that we have to do for HUD to satisfy their needs. But if you have a business activity That profit is yours. The only caveat is if the funds came from a public housing or a HUD program that should have been called restricted. And I can tell you that your staff is really good, Mr. Bailey and Mr. Ritchie there, because funds were transferred in the past that we decided to redo following proper paperwork in this given year. Instead of it being conceptual, we're getting the specific HUD permission to move funds out of one program into another. And when you're creating a new legal entity, the money that you're using for, I call it gap financing, not generally accepted accounting principles, but the gap between sources and uses that you need to contribute to the deal. If that came from public housing, it's due back or it's restricted. If it didn't come from public housing, SHCC profits are really untainted, unencumbered. It's earned profits. You can move that into business activities without HUD questioning that transfer. So HUD looks at the online submission, the financial data schedule, and really, really rakes us over the coals in that regard. Why did you transfer money out of this project to that project? Please explain why this money has a borrowing from that fund. They may ask questions on business activities if it came from a HUD program. But if it was within business activities or within component units, HUD really is not going to care too much about it. Good question. Good question.
And Brian, if I could just highlight for Commissioner Bailey, that's one of the things, and maybe Ann, you'd want to talk about it. I mean, that's really what our finance function does. It works to ensure that funds are carefully identified, segregated, and that we have real firewalls, particularly between federal and non-federal dollars. So we never want there to ever be question costs on any side of it. Although all sides are tested, we really work hard to make sure that there's no commingling of funds or that there's anything that even gets into the gray on use of dollars. If in doubt, we go with what particularly on the public side, we make sure that the public dollars meet every expectation of GASB and HUD. And you want to highlight anything on that score? Because with RAD,
that all makes sense.
And with RAD, it's gotten funder.
It's the lack of commingling you got to worry about.
That's right. And with RAD, and Ann might want to touch on this, it's gotten harder because we took what was essentially a public asset, a HUD asset, and we took ownership of it. With each of these closings and in this conversion, and we made some deals. One of the deals was that we were going to be setting aside 20 years of reserve for replacement. And you see that reflected in that, $35-36 million of that $44 million in restricted cash there. So we have to be very careful about the administration of those dollars, and our auditors in the future will test for that. We also have to be very careful now about the inflow of
my dog thinks about all.
but we're now getting a payment from HUD that reflects the operating subsidy plus the capital fund plus the energy performance contract that we used to receive before. That operating subsidy, that chunk of funding still comes to us each month, and we have to be very, very careful about how we manage that. And we have to do it on a property-by-property basis. So our finance functions become, we have more flexibilities, but we have more accountability. And that's what's made the challenges in finance that much more intense with RAD. Ann, anything you'd say on that? You're muted, Ann.
Yeah, it doesn't look like she's muted, but.
So, Brian, let me just say this real quick. We would not ever invest in pork rinds in California. We would think about maybe soybeans in Texas or some sort of Texas crop. But I think in lieu of that, since we can't, I hope that our dollars with the various banks are in money market accounts so that although we can't invest in securities and other financial instruments, but we are getting a little interest off the money given the amount that's in the various bank accounts.
Yes, sir. And I use that as an example because that was another instance where a housing authority violated its investment policies, and they actually did Fort Grimes in California and went under. You know, so that's when they changed some of the investment guidelines there. But, yeah, soybeans in Texas would definitely be different. I will say that in business activities, we will want to follow the HUD guidelines. In your component units, you might not necessarily have to follow those guidelines. However, we are. We're being ultra-conservative. All your funds are collateralized and secured as if it's the HUD regulations.
Brian, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Great. So, and I'll just expand a little bit on what Mr. Gerber said. When we go through each RAD conversion, there is a good deal of accounting that we have to do as we transfer money from public housing funds into the RAD program. So the capital fund program, we have a specific kind of accounting to do. Any operating subsidies, a specific kind of accounting that we have to do. And then our restricted reserves that we had in public housing, they have to come through a RAD deal to come out the other end. And when they do, even then there can be some restrictions on how we use those funds. But that's a part of every single RAD conversion, is making sure that those funds go through the proper processes to go from public housing funds and out of that. Not, Brian, I'm probably not describing that with the most technical terminology, but the way that I understand it is we did each RAD conversion was there was a significant amount of work that we had to do to get those funds out of public housing.
You're exactly right, Ann. And I will say that, you know, doing RAD by its nature was an investment of your funds. And a very smart move. I do want to point out that at the RAD collaborative that we were at just about a year ago, I believe, or was that this year in March? Yeah, right before the pay. Wow. It's called a demonstration. RAD is your rental assistance demonstration. And they were able, and I asked, you know, why demonstration? Why not a rule or a reg? And they're like, by using that term, they can be light on their feet and they don't need to go through all the due diligence of issuing a PIH notice and making programmatic changes that way. So the rules that were in place years ago was, hey, convert public housing to RAD and everything becomes unrestricted. Well, we followed the guidelines in that regard at a different housing authority, and then HUD said, whoa, 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 you can't, it's not unrestricted. It came from public housing. And we're like, yeah, but it's in RAD, and it's in your accounting brief, your authoritative guidance. She's like, well, they didn't change that yet, and, you know, the rules are in process. And so we're very conservative in that regard, and I think there was a huge exercise this year that took place just to point in that effect. And I will ask Sean, just to put it in perspective based on their questions, my Sean on our team here, how many bank accounts do they have or bank recs roughly?
I looked that up earlier, and I think I am seeing 72.
So you're segregating your funds appropriately based on the programmatic initiatives and goals. Each RAD has its own, and not only that, each RAD probably has its own security deposit, operating and payroll. Whereas, you know, maybe in the past, public housing was in one all general fund instead of each AMP having its own cash. But with RAD, separate reporting is required. All right. Well,
can I just come back to the Commissioner Bailey, you had sort of mentioned the concept of a holding company. And so I just wanted to say that I think that I think we are certainly being careful about segregation of funds. I don't know that I would categorize us as that. The main company certainly handles, those things that are most tightly linked to our federal funding streams, our Section 8 program, our VASH programs, our rental assistance programs, and the funds that come in now through RAD. So it's really kind of working, and functioning, at that top level, if you will, and focus there with all the, accounting and procurement procedures, based there. Austin Affordable and the subsidiary units, those blended components, are also critical to our operations. But we I guess I don't want it to sound as though there's a difference between the main part of HACA and those blended component units. We really are one integrated team and one integrated set of systems, integrated IT, integrated procurement, and I think that's just important to know. There are some accounting things that we have to do, and it falls an awful lot on finance to keep dollars separate and to manage accounts so that we protect our investments, protect our resources, and protect our families and the agency as a whole. So we do those things, and it probably becomes most stark in the context of the audit. And so I just wanted to just highlight that.
That's a very good point, Mike. And if I could add to Mr. Bailey's comment, most business activities or blended component units are secondary and peripheral to the housing authority operations. You know, they might enter one or two tax credit deals, mixed finance deals, have one or two partnerships. But you've expanded, and it's a lot bigger in your case than most other housing authorities. But you're dealing with HUD rules and GASB's reporting, and so that's where it is. Yeah. Very good question. Very good question. So everyone can still see the screen share. This is the big picture of your balance sheet, and this is what our opinion is on the basic statements. And these are just your assets, and I'm going to go into a little bit detail here, but you can see the $65 million of cash. We actually have some of it restricted so much it's in long-term, down under non-current. Capital assets is $125 million. Investments in joint venture, notes and loans receivable. This is where some of your money is going. You have about $65 million in notes and loans receivable and investments in joint ventures. Now, again, it's not really an investment that you're getting a return on your dollars. Perhaps some of it is, but you're entering into these deals and you're contributing your piece, and we're recognizing it as an asset almost as if it was cash, but they didn't give you the cash yet. You gave them some cash to help them build. It's the gap financing. You created affordable housing by doing that. So we still have – not only do you have the $65 million in cash, but you also have another $65 million that are not in fixed assets. It's kind of like a fixed asset, but you don't own it. It's in business activities with a separate owner. Related parties, not even blended. So that's just a snapshot of your assets. This is a detailed note of your fixed assets. It's a roll forward. And I just wanted to show you where that $125 million of fixed assets is coming from. If you follow the red lines, land and construction in process, not depreciated, and then there's a cost, $180 as of the end of the year, or $242 total with land of cost. But over time, we're going to depreciate that. Over time, the useful life is we're going to recognize some usage expense called depreciation, and your net is $125. This is a list of your investments in joint venture, the $25 million we saw on the owner other page there. So Century Park, you know, it's only at 10%. It's basically $73 million. But Pathways at Charmer South, it was $4.6 million. They were able to get a deferred lease payment. It counted as a contribution for you. It came from public housing land. They're now using the land. You're not making them pay you money, but you're getting credit and equity in that deal. So these are not really convertible assets to cash. This is you making a commitment for more affordable housing. If the partners go away, if there's an issue at all, this is your claim to that property, kind of like first right of refusal. If there's a buyout or a walk away, I'm sure Ron can talk a little bit more about that. But it's a big asset, $25 million. And in your liability side of the house, just showing it there, you do have some unearned revenue in ground leases. So this is them paying you money in a prepaid ground lease. We're going to call it deferred revenue because we want to recognize it. This is where GASB comes in. We have to recognize the revenue over the period of the lease. It's on the bottom, unearned. You also have some debt, $77 million. So I just didn't want to focus on the assets, but if you look at your long-term liabilities, now the difference between your assets and your liabilities is what we call net position. Net position, because you're a government framework, GASB, we don't want to say net income. You know, could you imagine if we said SHCC had $10 million of net income and the reporter was in the meeting and you had a roof that needed repair or you had 10 people on the waiting list that didn't get housed? It's programmatically restricted in its buckets. We call it it's simply called a change in net position, not in income, not surplus. The positive $15 million this year is really from SHCC admin fees and Austin Affordable management fees, developer fees. It's in your business activities. If this was strictly HUD, public housing, you'd have break even. Not only that, you'd have a net loss simply because of depreciation. You were given capital grants 1 year and you got an asset. That had a positive push to your net position in that year. If you didn't get any more capital grants, that asset would just be depreciated, and it would be a hit on net position. I would always expect the change in net position to be around your depreciation expense because everything else is funding as you get it. You can't spend it public housing-wise, HCV-wise. You can't spend more than you get. Ending net position is $130 million. And if you look at the balance sheet, the assets less the liabilities, the difference is about $130 million. Following the restricted cash, following that concept, about $42 million of your net position is restricted. Most of it's in your capital assets. That $125 million less the long-term debt of $75 million, $70, $80 million, that's your capital piece. You can't spend it. It's in hard assets. The restricted piece can only be used for restrictions, but unrestricted is about $40 million. Very healthy financial position. This is a snapshot of your income statement. Top side, one column, everything combined, public housing, Section 8, business activities, blended component units. And that's why you're showing third line from the bottom, 14.875 in a positive push to net position. Again, we don't call it net income. We don't call it profit. We simply say change in net position because you're a government. I call it the activity statement, but this statement is truly the schedule of changes in net position. The operating income. Yes, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say this slide is very helpful. One thing after you finish your explanation, you know, in a less healthy looking agency, if you could share, just I'd be curious, what would you be seeing, or what have you seen in your work?
Yes.
And what would be as an oversight board member, if you saw drops in certain areas, what would you see on this chart?
Good question. And can you see my mouse when I screen share?
Yes.
Okay. So if you look at the depreciation here, it's $5.9 million. And that operating income right here, I would expect this to be about negative $5.9 million because this is your HUD grants, $545. This is your HUD, your spending for current operations, $528. You have net income here because other operating revenue for you, this line, fourth line under operating revenues, is $20 million. That's really where your net income is coming from because affordable housing, Austin Affordable, excuse me, is generating developer fees, non-HUD. See, the HUD operating revenues is 70. Other government operating grants is SHCC. So you are getting $10 million with SHCC, roughly 8 in any given year. that contributes to the bottom line, but the other is often affordable. If a housing authority is strictly public housing or Section 8, that operating income line is normally negative. Then there's a few things down at the bottom, capital grants that could make it go positive, some interest, gain, loss on sale, but essentially your core operations are up above. Now, HUD came out with QORA, Quality Housing Reform Act, way back when, and told housing authorities to get additional funds and do additional deals like you're doing in your Austin affordable operations. And so you're a lot stronger than most other housing authorities. A lot of housing authorities have that investment in joint venture as negative. It's kind of upside down and not a positive number. This is the HUD. This is what HUD is looking at, Commissioner Bailey, and I think to Mr. Ritchie's comment as well. Public housing, 14850, that first row is getting less and less as you're doing RAD conversions. As a matter of fact, for March 2021, you know, I imagine it'll be half, if not one third, possibly, depending on the timing of some of the deals. Section 8 is solid. Section 8 is always happening. You could get funding in any given year more so than your expenses, and that could create a little P&L push to net position, but one year will offset with another year, and it could flux, you know, $8 million, $2 million, $4 million. And then the other programs are not that big. You can see 14.195 down here at the last item under direct, $6.5 million. That's RAD. That's public housing converting to RAD. We're going to see one program go down, one program go up. And because public housing is going away, so is your capital funds hiding in 14872 there, 1.8 million. So capital funds will go down as public housing goes away, but RAD will go up. What you do not see here is business activities. What you do not see here is your blended component units other than RAD funding. But if it's strictly tax credits, it's not going to be here. This is really what drives our third level of reporting, major program compliance. We must test your Section 8 program to have adequate coverage. In any given year, if we did not test it, we'd only have $11 million if we tested every other program. And under uniform guidance, the single audit guidance that we also have to follow, we have to test your Section 8 program. And you had no issues. And as board members, you would want us to test. I mean, it's a $60 million program, a lot of program regulations. So we do test it. And not only do you have good numbers, I want you to feel good that, you know, we tested compliance in these direct material areas and you had no exceptions. And I want to say, you know, I know Lisa Garcia is here. She's muted and offline. But, yeah, we're in good shape there. And just a thumbs up, Lisa. There she is for a little pose for the so it's not just Ann and the numbers and bank recs, all 72 of them. It's compliance in the voucher program. And I have another slide later where CARES Act and COVID-19, a lot of the regulations have been waived. So we don't have to test as much in detail on a lot of those compliance issues. But for March 31, 2021, Lisa and her department are trying to do intakes safely, trying to do inspections as needed safely. Inspections are not really required unless there's an issue. We can rely on landlord certifications. We can rely on your resident, a voucher holder's self-certifying instead of third-party verifications. A lot of that has been waived because of COVID. So, Lisa, thumbs up on Section 8 major program, and I didn't want it to get lost in the numbers.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Extra funding was provided after year end for COVID and CARES Act. Health and safety for staff and residents is paramount importance. So funding was given to housing authorities for a paperless environment, for resident intake, pulling them off the waiting list and getting them into a unit without coming face-to-face, trying to do electronic transfers and things like that. Waivers and administrative burdensome areas have been alleviated. We still would like housing authorities to do it to the extent feasible, because these are HUD rules and regulations that are required for proper program compliance. But HUD just said, look, do what you can. Immediately they came out with some program regulations right off the bat. So do what you can, keep everyone safe. The audit's been extended. CMAP is not required, things of that sort. So additional funding and less requirements is a little bit of a recipe for some noncompliance based on a normal audit risk. So educating our clients and the boards and the key staff in that area is important.
Yeah, Brian, HUD's been providing a good bit of CARES Act funding training that our staff has been attending. So when we've met with the department heads to make sure that's accounted for. Am I remembering correctly that CARES Act funding started for operations after March 27th? So this audit only has about 4 days of CARES Act funding. So most of go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, if I go back to that CEFA, the schedule of funding, there's only $600 of CARES Act funding in the period. Yeah.
So that'll be a much bigger part of the audit for this year.
Mm-hmm. As well as us focusing, maybe we don't need to work on CMAP so much, but we need to work on CARES Act allowability and proper reporting. Ironically, true to HUD form, they're doing the best they can. I don't want to say anything bad. However, they gave you additional money, and they said reporting guidance is forthcoming. Additional rules and regs are forthcoming. But here's the money, keep everyone safe. So it was really just track it, add a layer of controls on allowability, and we can always report it at the end of the year correctly. We did have a finding last year. So when I say last year, March 31, 2019, you had a finding. It was cleared for March 31, 2020. This is when Thomas left and Subra left in the accounting department, and Martha came in. So really, not to put any names to it, but a change in finance and CFO key positions, and it manifested itself as significant adjustments. Work papers needed to be redone and resent to us. More adjustments than we could live with without reporting a finding. It's cleared in the current year. For the year end 2020, things were better. Much improved, and we didn't have to issue a finding. We did have some journal entries and some clarifications, but we talked about HUD's financial data schedule, and we need to reclass some items. You know, if money went from this program to that program, is it a transfer on this line or that line? But we didn't have any unrecorded liabilities. So this year was much better than last year. And that would be a reflection of the current accounting department. And I guess in this case, thumbs up to Ann and her stepping into that role.
Thanks, Ryan. The staff paid a great deal of attention to this, as they should have, and did a great deal of work in preparing for this audit to make sure that everything was shipshape for you. I really have to give all the credit to my staff.
Very good. So no finding for 2020. It is here in the report, but it has a reference of a 2019. I want to call your attention to that. A lot of people will see this, and it's in the current year audit, but it's a required schedule to clear last year's finding, the previous finding. A couple other things, required communication, since I have the board here. If we had any issues, if we had any difficulties in dealing with management, if we had any disagreements, you know, for example, let's say we said to Ron in his Austin Affordable, hey, this really is a liability. It's not a revenue based on the structure of the deal. And he was adamant, it hurt my numbers and you can't do that. We didn't have any of that. That's a hypothetical. But if I had an issue in Section 8 and Lisa Garcia and her people were really adamant that, you know, we were wrong or we were arguing or things like that. We didn't have any of that this year. Kind of like they put us in a closet and they don't give us air conditioning and say, here, do an audit. You know, that's kind of a hostile relationship. So we didn't have any of that. I do want to point out that collectability of some of your assets is an estimate. Useful lives of fixed assets is an estimate. So estimates are in your financials. subject to change based on actual results. But we audit them, and we feel comfortable with your collectability on receivables and so forth.
Brian, can I go back to the no difficulties part of the audit? Because
yeah.
I think it's important, you know, there to note that the relationship with auditors is not a confrontational one, and by any stretch. I know it is in some places that we all have worked at, but it's not here. And neither Sylvia nor I don't believe, have gotten involved in any audit issue in this year or in any of the eight that I've been here. I think it's also important to note that I think that the is that correct, Brian? I don't think you've heard from me about any audit matter or accounting matter.
No.
We also don't. You know, the auditors call balls and strikes, but they don't get to. But our staff does not. We don't challenge how that's called. So while we might have a discussion to work through numbers or to work through issues or to work through what they're seeing, because it's just so darn complex. You know, once the decision is made by the auditors, and you all make the call, and I think it's really important that we have a zero tolerance policy among our staff, that we don't challenge the auditors. We respect their independence, and I think it's important for the board to know that.
Thank you, and we appreciate that. It is hard, you know, to be an auditor and to still have clients appreciate you. The magnitude and the depth.
I didn't say appreciate you.
Sorry. But no, to have a cordial relationship and still follow the professional standards. It's really hard in our profession to give a finding or to identify an internal control weakness and still, you know, maintain that client relationship in that regard. So the point of this slide is that it's a required communication that if we did have difficulties or we did have disagreements or something that didn't make it to a finding but was important enough to bring to the attention of the board, this is the letter that we would do it. And they pop these in there if there is issues for us to, you know, definitely elaborate on it. And we didn't have that. But I imagine other auditors, perhaps in the history of auditing, may have been strong-armed on a couple of issues. And so now it's the auditor responsibility to, you know, comply with the communication in that regard. I guess just like every rule, the gentleman that took his money from COCC to Hawaii, or, you know, the housing authority that invested in Fort Grimes in California, you know, they make rules for this. So could have been an Arthur Anderson type of thing that pivoted down. So, again, glad to say we had no issues there. And I believe your allowance on your notes receivable, that's a very large asset. We can, you know, we like the estimate there. No journal entries indicative of poor financial information this year, like last year. So that's great. And then we can turn it over to some questions that I think we answered them all. I know I tabled one maybe towards the end, but I think we got them all. And let me stop sharing. And here we go. I might need Andrea to help me with that. I don't see. Oh, here we go. I got it. Okay. So hopefully you don't see my screen. But if anyone has any questions, I know everyone's muted. Well, Anne,
I'll ask a question.
Well, I'll tell you one funny story, Brian, since we're having to tell funny stories. Years ago, I was the chief tax judge for Texas, and I had a hotel motel tax problem. And the guys came in, and I said, you know, I ruled against them, and I said, you're your documents just don't reflect what you're saying. And so I said, oh, okay. And on a rehearing, they came back and they had put the correct numbers in there, but they had used white out and written in the new stuff. And I said, no. And their lawyers were jumping them. Oh, we didn't do this. And they got popped with a 25% fraud penalty. But that's an accountant story. So.
Yeah.
You're showing your age, Chuck. White out.
Yeah, I know.
Brian, if I could ask, yeah. And I know I was putting her on the spot, but Laura Ann is kind of new to looking at some of our work, and I know you're trying to ensure that there's good quality control over our you and Sean have been the audit team with others for a period of time, and I know you've brought in Laura Ann to assist with just making sure that there's the strongest possible review here. Laura Ann, I would ask maybe if it's okay to ask you, if you were advising commissioners on what you've just seen of the things that I'd be watching these things, right? It's always important to keep an eye on these five things, as you sort of think about the fundamentals of oversight that board members need to do. Are there anything stand out to you that over the next year, when you talk about finance, hit these things?
Right. Yeah. Good question. I think there's two different ways to look at it. I'll always defer to being on top of the compliance piece, which you guys are, and Brian talked about that. So that's very important as well, and it's something that we do. And so having those internal spot checks or inspections or whatever the team does to maintain the great reporting requirements that they have on that side is really good to monitor and for the board to just be aware of. And then from a financial aspect, I always challenge people, we're accountants, so we look at this stuff all the time. And I mean, I'll say I love it. I know, Brian and Sean love it as well, but it's more so about you as directors and the oversight to, if you have questions, don't hesitate to ask them, because a fresh set of eyes, and really that's what we're doing on our end, a fresh set of eyes can really bring to light some things that maybe people just haven't thought about or they've never had that particular question asked to them to, go down that path. So whether that's reaching out to us, because you might feel more comfortable there, we're always open to that. Obviously, your management team at the authority is definitely open to that and assisting however they can. So that's my number one thing I always say to people is, if you have a question, just ask. You do have a fiduciary responsibility in your role. And I will say, and this is really reiterating a little bit of what Brian said, I mean, as an organization, you're very healthy. You do have a lot of complex transactions and organizational structures, but on our end, we come across that a lot, and it can always or oftentimes present challenges from a reporting standpoint and a misunderstanding of whose asset is this and what's our responsibility and what do we have. And I will say, as an organization, you really seem to have a good job of monitoring that.
That's really helpful. And can I ask one last question, which is that so I think it's no secret that we asked LDG to because of the number of deals we were doing with LDG, we asked LDG to independently work with Berman Hopkins to test on a variety of things so that we could feel confident that they were as solid as they are. That work is in progress, and the good news is that we understand that things are progressing well there, and we have reasons to feel confident. But the question I've got is it reasonable to ask, if the board were ever to have an issue that, I'm kind of concerned about that, or I don't feel comfortable about that, to direct, because the auditors work for the board to a degree, and I wonder if there's something that just doesn't sit right, that you can say, hey, we'd like to do a special engagement, come in and take a look at something for a period of time separate from the from this audit. Is that
an
option?
It's definitely an option, and again, it's something that I encourage you as a board. It is a unique relationship because as auditors, we do really work for the board, but our, what I'll call our day-to-day interaction is with the management team. So, you know, we make a special effort to communicate with the board and participate in these types of meetings, but as a board member, at any time, you can reach out to us, and we've had situations where things needed to be handled confidentially, so we really worked it into our audit procedures. So, you know, if there was a real concern or questions about something, it didn't sound any alarms if need be. So, again, don't hesitate to reach out to us. I would say that that's a great thing to do as board members because we are doing an audit, and it is a risk-based audit. So we are evaluating the organization and then digging into specific areas that we deem to be more risky or, you know, more financially important to the organization. So there might be something else that is risky to you as board members or even as management that we might not be picking up, and have those conversations with us as part of the audit, but we're happy to jump in and do. Again, it would be similar to an agreed upon procedure where you guys would outline, you know, employee travel expenses, for instance, is one. Sometimes people are, you know, our employee reimbursements are getting excessive. Can you look into these, you know, make recommendations for us? Do you see any issues or concerns over our process? And we can put together an analysis of what we're going to do and then give you guys a report.
Thank you.
Yes.
So that was a very good question. So that really concludes for this meeting. I think there's another meeting starting officially right now in 1 minute.
There is. Mr. Chairman, unless there's any other questions, I would suggest maybe we take a 10-minute break and reconvene with the full HACA board meeting. We'll take this item up first since we've just heard about it and go from there. There's not actually a formal action other than just to present just very quickly and get it on the record that it was the audit was provided to the board. But Chairman Ritchie and Vice Chair Bailey, if you're comfortable with adjourning this meeting and then we'll come back in 10 minutes, that would be great.
Mr. Gerber, I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Edwina.
So our agenda is the presentation of the independent auditor's report. Will we be accepting the report and taking action on it at a future meeting?
No, ma'am. Actually, there's not a requirement to accept the report. It just sort of is what it is, and you're receiving it. One of the unfortunate things, the staff team felt it was important to go and do the – every year you should see an audit. And this year, because of the pandemic, there were flexibilities to extend into next year and all sorts of things. And we felt because of the nature of our work, because we have been really successful with the shifting to the work from home platform and everyone's hitting all the marks. Plus it could have some implications for SHCC. We decided let's go ahead and just knock the audit out and keep it on time. And so it's a little late this year because of pandemic related things. Things have gotten pushed back, but we wanted you to hear it this year. So you've received you will receive the formal bound copy, you know, right after the 31st after it's submitted, the pretty version that you're used to seeing. But we hope we gave you enough of it so that you felt comfortable this year saying, hey, I've seen enough of this audit. I've been briefed enough on it. But if we need to bring Sean and Laura Ann and the team back, we certainly can. But I think we just wanted to get it on the record that you've heard about the audit for the fiscal year ending March 20th, 2020. And that it's in this year's, you know, books, so to speak, for the board activity. But again, no action for you to take. It's just it would just be a very brief presentation.
So in the past, we have not accepted the audit. We have just been presented the audit.
In the past, actually, in the past, actually, someone did sometimes offer a motion to approve accepting the audit. We did not put it in there because we thought that it was by construction for procedure not correct. And so it's just listed as a presentation. If someone offered a motion, I'm sure we won't be held, on it. I think it'd be fine.
Okay. Mike, okay. Since we all the commissioners are here, I don't know if we need to do much more than just say on the record that the audit's been presented in the audit committee and all the commissioners. Let's have a question. Might save us some time and save our auditors some time.
I think we can absolutely do that. I think we can absolutely do that.
Well, then I tell you, as chairman of this committee, I'm going to adjourn.
Thank you all.
We're adjourned.
We'll return it to this line at 12:05 at 12:10.
Can we just leave this stuff on? We need to sign in again.
No, you can leave it on, but why don't you go ahead and just for your own benefit, go ahead and maybe press mute and press and turn off your camera. And again, we'll restart at 12:10.
Well, I was going to eat lunch. Didn't y'all want to watch me eat some lunch?
Mike, are we okay for Brian and Laura Ann and Sean to go ahead and sign off, or do you want them to come back for the 12 o'clock?
I think once you guys, I think if one of them could just stay on till we dispatch with the item, I don't think there's going to be any issue, but I think just to be on the safe side. Sean, if you want to hang around with us, that'd be awesome.
And I probably should
have mentioned.
Brian, let me just say this. I really enjoy the presentation. To the extent that you all do a similar presentation like this next year, which I would encourage you to do because, as I always tell Mike, we're interlopers. I mean, we come to a board meeting once a month. We hear the financial stuff, but when you go through the auditing stuff and you're using different terms that we don't use every day like you do, it's always good to have the sort of that refresher course that you just provided. The only thing I would ask that you add in there, and you did a good job of explaining it, but just put together what I would consider a dummy income statement. Where a housing authority is not doing as good, so we can actually compare the numbers.
Okay.
You did a good job explaining it, where the depreciation is. If you're relying on strictly public housing in Section 8, you're probably operating in a deficit. But if we could just see a fictitious housing authority in their numbers, then for some of us who are visual, it would be, we can better appreciate where we are as an agency. I, as the national president of NARO, I've heard all the stories, and so I kind of know, but for my fellow board members, I think it'd be good for them just to kind of see kind of what a fictitious agency that's struggling, what their numbers look like compared to where we are. Because, again, I don't think we sometimes get a chance to appreciate how good we're doing until we kind of do a comparison.
Very good point. Thank you. We'll make a note of that. Appreciate
all right. But, again, I thought the presentation was great. You laid it out in a very – elementary fashion to sort of bring us all up to speed on the accounting and auditing stuff and the differentiation between, the gas and then what HUD requires. So I really appreciate that. And, again, I would encourage you to do something similar like that in the future.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Will do.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, have a good meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hey guys, I failed to mention that Sean was such an important part of this mix, and we really are grateful to. He's fun to joke with, but he did a first rate job, and we really appreciate the special attention paid this year. With some difficult and thorny issues. Thanks, Sean, for what you've done.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Laura Ann. Sean, you're going to stick around for us.
Sean, you're muted. And just real quick, or Andrea, isn't it a separate dial-in, or is it the same? Okay. Because it's
no,
a form of
it's
board
the same.
Meeting. Okay.
It's the same.
And feel free to stay on if y'all want to, of course. I just think Mike was trying to release you.
Yeah, and I appreciate Commissioner Bailey, bringing up that point. I mean, you've got a full agenda at a full board meeting, and you just had a special meeting for this. So,
yeah.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Take care.
Thank you.
ask who called in on the phone, please?
Mr. Chairman and board members, I'd like to suggest maybe we go ahead and get started with our meeting. Folks could begin to turn on cameras, and I think we should call the meeting to order. It's right now about 12:17, and I'd like to get started in the next minute or two, if we could.
Andrea, can you do a sound check with me? Can you hear me okay?
You sound great, Lisa.
Thanks.
Andrea, how about me? Am I okay?
So, sounds good, Ron. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Ron, I've got to tell you, I showed my daughters the ornaments that you had said Perry, his grandmother made, and what a wonderful tradition that was. And I told her about the Christmas tree that had 78 ornaments like that, and they thought that was very neat.
If she ever needs a tutorial after and wants to ever pick up that tradition, Perry would happily share on how to make them.
I think my daughter's gifts are not in embroidering, but more unfortunately in baking. I wish she would take up embroidering.
Because if you bake it, you got to eat it.
Find oh, yeah.
It yeah, Mike, and if she embroiders it, you have to wear it.
Well,
there you go.
Last night was Wednesday night, so it was a perfect opportunity to, you know, that was reason enough to go make cupcakes. So need that like I need a hole in my head.
Kelly, what was the number that Catherine Craigo came up with?
I think it was 364.
64.
It was 364, and it was that was me that offered that question, Commissioner. And if you think through it, every time if you sing the 12 Days of Christmas, you sing a partridge in a pear tree 12 times. So it's 1 times 12. And the second gift is 2 turtle doves. You sing that 11 times. So it's 2 times 11, 3 times 10, 4 times 9, all the way up to 12 times 1. You add all those up and you get 364.
Yes. And I didn't mean to give credit to somebody else, Ron.
I don't know about that credit. I just wanted to explain it to you.
Yeah, Catherine won the Austin Nut.
Yes, she did.
Chairman Ritchie, are you on? Still on?
Yeah, sorry about that. I had the camera covered up.
No worries. And we have do we have all of our commissioners on? Commissioner Duncan Hall is on. Great, Mr. Chairman. Should we go ahead and start the meeting?
Sure. Go ahead and proceed, mate.
Sure. Mr. Chairman and board members, this is calling to order the meeting of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, and the South Congress Public Facilities Corporation. So we'll be calling open all three of those board meetings. And the time now is 12:21. Vice Chairman Bailey. Vice Chairman Bailey?
Here.
Commissioner Carrington?
Present.
Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Present.
Commissioner Apostolo?
Present.
Chairman Ritchie?
Present.
Mr. Gruber, I didn't mean to interrupt, I'm sorry, but we also have to open up the Austin Affordable PFC as well as you opened up the SoCo, but I don't think you opened up the Austin Affordable PFC, which we can do now or later. I'm just wanted to make a point that.
I'm sorry. Why don't we let's go ahead and open up Austin Affordable PFC as well, and also at 12:20, we'll do that at 12:22. And Vice Chair Bailey, Vice Chair Bailey, Commissioner Carrington
here,
present.
Commissioner Apostolo,
present.
Commissioner Duncan Hall,
present.
And Chairman Ritchie,
present.
All four are now open.
All right, so we officially have a quorum, so we're officially called to order at 12:22 on Thursday, December 17, 2020. At this time, we'll have citizens' communication. Is there any member of the general public who is on the video conference call who would like to address the board at this time? If so, please make yourself known. Hearing none, we will move on to the next item, which is the consent agenda. The consent agenda consists of the minute board minutes from the November 19, 2020 meeting. Are there any changes, amendments, or modifications that need to be made to the minutes? Hearing none, the chair will entertain a motion to approve item number one on the consent agenda.
I move approval.
Motion by Commissioner Duncan Hall, seconded by Commissioner Costello. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, if we can go to item number two on the, I'm sorry, to item number three on the HACA agenda, which is the presentation of the auditor's report for fiscal year ending March 31st, 2020.
All right. So the auditor met prior to the board meeting. Commissioner Bailey is the chair of the audit committee. I will ask him for a brief report on the committee meeting for the general public.
Here, I referred work. Mr. Bailey, we're having trouble hearing you.
I can't hear anybody.
Okay. Let me just give a brief report. The audit committee met. The audit firm of Berman Hopkins made a presentation on an audit that it conducted on the, over the Housing Authority and its enterprise various funds for the period ending March 31st, 2020. There were no findings, and all the finances were in order. The audit committee basically accepted the report. Commissioner Bailey, if you have anything you want to add, or Ms. Gass, if you have anything you want to add.
I don't. Can y'all hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
But I'm here. I can hear it now, but I just heard about every eighth word, like talking to Mr. Bullock when I was hearing that it wasn't working. Some of the senators used to do that just to jack him around, and of course, I paid the price. No, I don't have anything to add.
Okay, Ms. Gass. We can't hear you.
And we can't hear you. I think your phone's on mute.
Gotcha. Is that better?
Yes.
Thank you, Commissioner Ritchie. I want to thank Sean Cedar and Brian Nemeroff from Berman Hopkins for working with us. And thank you for all the questions, Commissioners, that you asked today. We're proud of the results of the audit and very happy to present it to you today. And I also, even though none of them are here, I want to say in front of all of you how much I appreciate my staff. They worked very hard this past year to get this good audit, and I really have to give them all the credit for this work. So thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I would just interject that we're super grateful to the staff. They did an amazing job this year, as always. I want to give my give a shout out to Ann Gass, who's done a tremendous job in her role first as acting deputy CFO and then stepping into the role as acting CFO. It's been a challenging year as we've fully converted to RAD. We've had lots of complexity with our blended component units. To be sure, I think this is a very positive audit that we received, and so we're grateful for the constructive relationship we've had with the audit team at Berman Hopkins. and Sean Cedar, who's on the call from that firm. But it's this has been a challenging year, and I thank Anne for her leadership, and we look forward to continuing to run a strong, compliant, finding-free operation. Thank you.
All right. Let me just add my thanks to Berman Hopkins for their work. And then I like the presentation because they walked through it in a very elementary fashion to make sure the commissioners understood the terminology, the concepts, and how they apply to our multifaceted organization. And so with that, we will go to item number 2, which is an update on the PACA's action related to the coronavirus and updating resident and client support services.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While you have received a report of the top things that each division at HACA is working on in this very difficult time of COVID-19 and economic distress, we want to make sure that you have the latest information about work going on with our resident families as we approach the holiday season, to make sure that we leave no family untouched, and that we're working hard to address critical needs that they have. So I want to turn it over to Leilani Lim-Viejas and to Catherine Crego and to others on our team to walk through some of the really wonderful work that they're taking the lead on. Leilani?
Yes, thanks, Mike. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am. Sure can.
Great. So good afternoon, Board of Commissioners, colleagues, and distinguished guests. My name is Leilani Lim-Viejas, and I serve as the Senior Director of Community Development for the Housing Authority, and we do have a list here of projects that we've been working on at some holiday-related events and initiatives for our not only PBRA public housing residents and also with Section 8. So I'd like to start with sharing the turkey distribution. So just like with everything else that we've done for resident services, we have pivoted to COVID-related services. Now this year, the Austin Apartment Association historically would provide about 600 turkey baskets to our residents. Because of the lack of funding, they were only able to raise funds for 400 turkeys, but now they're not turkey baskets, but gift cards. So with the wonderful relationship and I want to give a shout out to Ron Cowell, who contacted apartment management professionals, they were able to donate $10,000 to fill that gap. And so this year we were able to serve all 600 residents, just like as if nothing ever happened. So that was a very stressful time, but we were so grateful for the generosity of Ron and Suzanne and AMC and also Austin Apartment Association. We were able to provide those gift cards to those families. Now, since we are resident-led and resident-empowered, 600 gift cards is not enough for everybody. So in order for a family or a household to qualify for this turkey gift card, they must have served as a resident council officer, a Jobs Plus participant, a family self-sufficiency participant, or a Bringing Health Home participant. So we're glad to report that at least for this year, there weren't any changes or reductions as far as the turkey distribution. The next item on my list is Blue Santa. Blue Santa is also a very valued partner of the Housing Authority. For many, many years, they have provided toys and books and socks for our families. For all the families, for Section 8 and for PBRA, they were going to provide gift cards for those families. And again, with the lack of funding, they were only able to raise 50%. And so again, we were at a stage to where we might have to deliver the bad news that some families were not going to be receiving this gift card this year around. So as a response to that, during one of our HACA staff calls, we had this fundraising challenge for our HACA family, meaning our HACA employees, to donate to the cause. And our CEO and President Michael Gerber was gracious enough to say, we will double match every penny that the HACA employees will give. So we had a two-week fundraiser, and with the generous donations of 50 HACA employees, we were able to raise $9,171.99. And so with that, again, we were able to fill that gap and that hole to provide gift cards to all of our families with children under 14 years old. And we were also able to add through those funds also gift cards to all of the units for our elderly and disabled communities, which includes North Loop, Gaston, Lakeside, and Salina. So through this adversity and everything else, at least for this year, we were able to raise the funds that we needed. And again, it's through the generosity. And a lesson learned is that we are very, very thankful to our community partners, because what used to take one community partner to get this project done, now it took the Haka family and several other community partners to really help us through this holiday season, especially during COVID-19. And with this donation with Blue Santa, we were eligible for the Emerald Corporate Sponsorship, which means that the Haka logo will be displayed, recognized on the Blue Santa website. There will also be the Haka logo displayed on the sponsorship board at the Blue Santa warehouse, where they store their toys and their books and their gifts for the family. And we'll also be receiving an acknowledgement certificate. So a thank you to all of those who pulled together to make the holidays brighter for our family. Last week, the Austin Area Urban League had a virtual gala. And so they invited some Haka residents, and I'm pleased to announce that 50 of our Haka residents were able to join this virtual gala. It was a wonderful evening with music and awards. And but I would like to point out that the only reason why we were able to log into this event is through the wonderful work of the digital inclusion team, who they were able to provide the digital devices to our resident council officers, and not only that, but also provide the training on how to log in. A lot of our residents before COVID did not even have an email address. So there was a lot of training in between for them to be able to log in. And needless to say, they also got a very nice meal delivered to them as part of that event. So thank you to the digital inclusion team, Catherine and Tracy, and we are still holding our resident council meeting virtually. So I think that it was just one event, but it's really a culmination of the teamwork for our residents to be able to enjoy that event. We also had, during this holiday season on November 19th, our first virtual national night out. And we did have about 60 residents log in to that event. This was hosted by Joshua Bates, our ARO coordinator and IDAS coordinator. And it was a wonderful event where we invited Officer Marcus Davis from the Austin Police Department and also Michael Ross talk about the importance of safety in your neighborhood, the differences between 311 and 911, when to call. And we also had a fun spin the wheel event, and we had the names of the participants, and whichever name it landed, we awarded them with a bucket of PPE with Clorox and face masks and cleaning supplies. So that was a really nice touching incentive for residents to join the event. Another thing that we have been working on is AB Honor Roll and perfect attendance. As you all know, we have the Haka Active Learning Program. With our data sharing agreement with AISD, for this year, compared to last year, we were able to identify 200 more residents who qualified for AB Honor Roll and perfect attendance. The majority of them were middle and high school students who never bothered to turn in the report cards. But now through the data sharing agreement, we're able to see their grades. And so hoping that things will get better in 2021, we're excited to host a larger group for our youth incentive trip. We have this one trip dedicated to our excellent students at the Housing Authority. Last year, we had 100 students go to Epic Fun. So we might do it next year at Austin Park and Cista. And it's just one day with staff and the students to really honor and celebrate their academic achievements. The next on my list, and I think this is for Chairman Ritchie, and I know that I've been taking notes about you mentioning to make sure that we document all these projects and that we're able to capture the different transitions that we've done. And so through the NARO Awards, which is coming up, I have submitted 6 different projects just for Austin Pathways to talk about the events since March. And so I'm going to list them very quickly. We have placed nomination for the Haka Resident and Client Support Center, the Haka At-Home Learning Program regarding opening the community room, the Para-Educator Program, which is resident-powered and resident-led, and the Digital Inclusion Initiative. We're also submitting nomination for the 2020 census and voter registration, the Bringing Health Home Team, our COVID-19 outreach, flu vaccine clinic, and the outreach for families who tested positive to COVID-19. And also to mention that our four community health workers are HACA residents. So that, I believe, is a wonderful program to nominate. The COVID pivot, just like I've mentioned, resident council meetings that are virtual, national night out, the HACA scholarship ceremony that we also hosted was virtual, the school supplies distribution, turkey distribution, and Blue Santa. So those are just ideas that we're presenting that we're able to execute with CDC guidelines, and also the rent assistance program spearheaded by Pilar Sanchez. So you have a menu of options to be able to select which programs you feel are we should be submitting tomorrow, and I'm confident that you'll receive at least one out of one of those six nominations that I have submitted. And lastly, I just wanted to report before I hand it over to Catherine for the HACA Resident Time Support Center update. In absence of Pilar Sanchez, I'm pleased to report that as of March, the Austin Pathways team has raised over $360,000 for resident services. And so despite all the different adversities and challenges, we have been able to maintain our very good relationship with our community partners. And so more information to come. Of that $360,000, that includes a $100,000 grant from United Healthcare, which will extend our Bringing Health Home program until December 31st, 2021. And that's also to fund our community health workers. So that's a lot of information just during the holidays, right? We're talking about 90 days. This is, and there's a lot more. And Mike knows me. I can talk forever. I'll entertain questions. If not, I'll go ahead and hand it over to Catherine Crago for the Resident Client Support Center update. Thank you.
No questions. Good afternoon, Board of Commissioners. I'm Catherine Crago. As you know, I serve as Head of Strategic Initiatives for Austin Pathways. So the support center, you may remember, we spun it up on March 25th, and so it's been 6 months now. The operations of the support center are really stabilized so that staff are able to be on that support center and do other work at the same time. We've had a steady influx over the past 6 months of about 1,500 contacts per month. For some reason, in November, we saw a 30% decrease, but we've already seen a 20% increase over our previous months in December. So I think in December, it looks like we're probably going to maybe do like, almost double of the calls and contacts that we normally do. And so much of that is because we are operating all of these Blue Santa gift cards and AB Honor Roll updates. Those are all going through that contact support center. In November, we used outbound calls and texts to ensure that 50% of our PPRA families opted into Blue Santa, which is very exciting. This whole winter, this fall and this winter, if you're a resident, you call the HACA Resident Client Support Center, and you have a question about your internet service or your computer, or you need a device for your child or advice about how to deal with a charter school or AISD, you'll be routed to one of our Austin Community College IT interns. They are staffing the support center full-time now, and they will help those residents. So we have dedicated extensions now. We're starting to have specialized extensions. The largest number of requests for support in November were related to rent and utility assistance. That's a shift from food and PPE and other kinds of assistance we were being asked for before. So it feels like that relationship between residents and partners is now being a little bit more stabilized in that area and in our ongoing Bringing Health Home program. But rent and utility assistance was number one. And then, of course, we have dozens of residents who call a couple times a week just to check in and talk about things and check about their property and maybe just talk about life in general. So the support center is now a really, keystone piece of our communications with residents, and it is a great platform that's helping us gain insight more timely than we could because we're not on property, and to build those relationships, those trust relationships that we rely on to help residents be successful.
Catherine, question?
Yes, ma'am.
Will we keep that client support center open indefinitely?
Right now, we are planning to keep that support center open. You know, the great advantage is that it connects to our resident support specialists to their cell phones. And having that one-stop shop just ensures that when anybody calls, they can always get help right away. You know, that someone will pick up the phone right away and that they will get help right away. And that was our charge from the very beginning. You know, pick up the phone on the second ring and provide that help immediately. And so we do anticipate keeping that open as we transition to Rent Cafe and other digital transformations that agency is going through. This is going to be a great one-stop shop place for residents to, you know, manage their information and things like that as well.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Lonnie, I've got a question. On the program for the turkey meals, tell me about that again.
Yes, sure, Commissioner Bailey. So the Austin Apartment Association for the past 30 years was providing a turkey basket to our families. But it was a physical basket with an actual turkey, stuffing, potatoes, you know, green beans.
Right.
And so we used to have that. But this year, because of COVID-19, you know, they couldn't distribute the turkeys. So they basically transitioned to gift cards. So it's like $40 gift cards for family as opposed to the turkey. So with that gift card, it's an HEB gift card where residents can either purchase it online or use that gift card to purchase their grocery items for their Thanksgiving meal. And so for 30 years, we were doing that nice event, and I know that some of the commissioners were involved. We started at Georgian Manor with 200 volunteers, and we were delivering these 200 baskets all across the Hawker properties. And so with that COVID pivot, we were able to still provide 600 gift cards to our Hawker families.
And how many families don't get the card? See, I'm thinking somebody sitting there by themselves in one of our old folks homes and people next to them get one of these deals because they're on the committee or they volunteer somewhere, and these folks just either they don't want to, they're too old, they're too sick, and they don't get anything. And that bothers me a little bit. Is there anything we can do for those types of folks?
We can start, I mean, yeah, that has been an issue before. So usually in general, we get about 600 baskets. So that's only 50% if we were to do every single household. So it's just a matter of, you know, distributing it across all the households. Again, it's a donation by the Austin Apartment Association.
Now,
so it might be.
Yeah, I got that. But we got money. I mean, that's, Mike, am
No, you're right. You're right, Commissioner Bailey. We try hard to know the families that have needs and identify those needs. And we've really worked hard to between our partnership with Family Elder Care, working with our seniors, our managers on properties who know the residents well. You know, they're seeing them every month for, you know, rent collections or for, you know, just check-ins and housekeeping visits and other types of things. It's been a little harder now, obviously. But we've, you know, between our, you know, even our maintenance staff will speak up that resident maybe having an issue. And certainly our incredible Austin Pathways team, you know, is just all over the properties working with those most in need. We always look for gaps. And so that's where we have found amazing partners who have stepped in with services and programs. And so that's why you're hearing about Blue Santa and you're hearing about, you know, partnerships with, you know, Meals on Wheels and an array of others. We will be working to make sure that there's no one who's not served. And Leilani, maybe I would ask you and Catherine, are you aware of anyone in our agency who you believe what wants to be served but who has not been able to access or connect with a program? Because that would sort of be our underserved market, if you will, for anything extra that we can do. And if so, we absolutely can work to bring resources to bear on those folks. Do we know who those folks are? And
Well, Leilani, I think I'll just share a note on process because I think Leilani will have more specifics, but we are using that Hawker Resident and Client Support Center to reach out to every senior family. That was, you know, initially we were doing that once a week, then we went to every other week, and now we're around once a month, and we're coordinating any services that they need, food boxes and other things like that. So from a process perspective, that's how we're catching folks, trying to catch folks that we think, you know, might be, we might not know about. And then I'll just hand it over to Leilani to share any specifics.
And usually if the property manager or family elder care identifies family, we never deny, right? We always have extra gift cards to give out to them. And also, just as a reminder, that we're not the only ones distributing turkey. A lot of the churches and other communities are also having those programs. And so maybe it's signing them up to maybe, you know, maybe with the Central Texas Food Bank, or maybe it's St. Vincent de Paul. So we haven't really identified a particular family that has not had anything for the holidays, because if there's really nothing else, then we'll provide the gift card. So we've always been able to fill that gap throughout the years.
And Chuck, one of the things that's been, Commissioner Bailey, one of the things that's been challenging with the food drive and that we've been working on is that, you know, before there's been this tradition of, you know, give everybody a 12-pound butter ball and give folks a pound of flour. And I mean, it's got all the, it's a large amount of food that we're giving to somebody. And I mean, I would personally struggle to go and cook up a turkey. And so I know, and we know a lot of residents did. So what we found, like at North Loop, is Mary Gonzalez and Angie Cortez, they would go and they'd have they'd spend days cooking turkeys, there. And, you know, from the Apartment Association, they would set aside, you know, the turkeys that, and the food that the seniors just couldn't, you know, handle cooking themselves. And they do some large scale meals, which was wonderful. We continue to do some of that, but we're also working with folks to, you know, find meal portions that are appropriate, you know, maybe finding giving folks a turkey breast that's sliceable, maybe giving folks, portions that, they can more easily manage or individual trays. So the Apartment Association has been working with us, you know, this year, you know, on some of that, but we don't want to leave anyone who's not served. So I think your point's really well taken. And Leilani and Catherine, if there's folks, let's continue to check, we've got our list, we'll check them twice. Let's make sure that if there's someone who's not included, and if we need to do more, let's absolutely, and we can't connect them with either existing HACA resources or those of partners, we definitely obviously want to fill that need.
All right, thanks.
Can I have something to say? Can I say something?
Of course, Commissioner Apostolo.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, in the past, I've had a sponsor from Mount Olive Baptist Church. It's been about 5 years. This year we couldn't do it. They would bring me 40 to 60 already cooked meals, turkey meals, and I'd wait for them at 7:30 in the morning at my apartment or Jobs Plus. Tiffany would help, and we distribute them to all the residents on Chalmers that were seniors and or homebound or you know, that lived alone. So those that didn't get the turkey, because like you said, they live by themselves, they don't want to cook all this big old turkey, these meals were prepared by volunteers at the Baptist Church, Mount Olive, and we did that every year for 5 years. This is the first year we did not give any meals out because they weren't doing it because of the COVID. So, yeah, there are some people here that need, but they need, you know, a plate, not the whole turkey. Because some of them asked me, two of them are in wheelchairs, and I there was no sponsor. There was nobody wants to do it right now with the COVID.
The deliveries of food are difficult. Commissioner Apostolo, I'll ask you, and Leilani will reach out to you afterwards, and let's see if we can match up resources.
Okay.
At the very least, I think we can do things around a gift card to help make it so folks can order from HEB or go to HEB.
Right.
Thanks for letting us know that. I appreciate it. Catherine, anything else you or Leilani would add related to the work that we're doing? And I agree with you. The Client Resident Support Center has just really wonderful, a really wonderful team on the other end of the line. And, you know, it'll look different after COVID ends, but we're certainly intent on trying to keep a lot of the work that we've done, the functionality and the connections that we've made with residents. Yeah, it's a new tool to stay connected to residents that in many cases we hadn't been connected to before. So, hats off to Catherine and Leilani and the team. And so we'll be looking forward to what the next iteration of that, you know, looks like, building on the foundation we've already built.
And also Barbara Jackson has put in the chat box a couple of comments that people could look at to see, which kind of supports what Leilani and Catherine has said as well, is that, you know, we make every effort to address the needs of all of our citizens, especially when those needs are made known to us and we can do something very specific for them. Thanks, Barbara.
I would also say that one of the things we've also done that I don't think we touched on is, you know, we're obviously continuing to be very mindful about healthcare and healthcare delivery. Our residents are accessing healthcare when appropriate for, you know, to manage chronic conditions through our Bring Health Home initiative, which continues to be an important part of our outreach to work with residents. And I would just say that, you know, we are very much in the queue with community care and with People's Community Clinic and others to really be thinking about how we can make sure that our vulnerable populations are at their appropriate place in line for vaccinations when that's available.
And I did talk to Mike about whether we should make a big push with the public health officials about getting our maintenance folks considered as priority as well, since they are frontline workers. They have to go into residents' apartments to make repairs and things of that nature. So Mike and I have had a conversation not only about getting our residents, since in many cases they would qualify as vulnerable people who should be inoculated first, but we also talked about our maintenance crew. I know I've been on the call, and I think Lisa and Mike and I have been on the call with other housing authorities around the country, and they are making a similar push. And there are issues that come up, and I know Mike is looking at them because I know within my own family and talking to other people regarding our staff, whether there should be some mandate that when the opportunity comes to get vaccinated, whether they should. And so I know Mike is visiting with Wilson and others about you know, what we can do and what we can't do, because obviously you know, the employees have certain rights, but Texas is a right to work state. And so those are issues that are popping up now that the vaccine is being made public. And obviously, if you go to work, you want your colleagues to be as safe as you are. And then you got some folks who have some real concerns about whether, in fact, they should get vaccinated. And so I know Mike is looking at those issues.
Yeah, I appreciate Wilson's monitoring what's possible and what's not possible. But what's most important right now is, of course, keeping everybody safe as the positivity rates and the numbers you know, in Travis County continue to go up to unacceptably high levels. We've had, you know, a couple of staff members this week who unfortunately were diagnosed with COVID. We don't believe that was for on the job related exposures. But, you know, it was a call to, again, remember how careful we all need to be. And we'll look to vaccinations as soon as we can access them. And we'll look to what our options are as a staff team and as an agency to ensure that we, you know, are respectful of people's rights, but also respectful of the rights of people not to come down with a, you know, a very serious viral infection. So we're working through that. And I appreciate Wilson helping to guide us and navigate that along with Gloria Morgan. Mr. Chairman, I think that's all the ads we have under number two. I'd suggest we jump over to number four, if you're okay with that, unless there's other questions on work that we're doing.
All right. So we'll go to item number four, which is the presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding resolution number 2684, approval of revisions to the Housing Choice Voucher Administrative Plan. And Ms. Garcia will lead us through this discussion.
Sure. Good afternoon, commissioners, staff, and guests. So what you have before you is resolution number 2684, the approval of the Housing Choice Voucher Administrative Plan. This was brought to you in October, to the October board meeting, and we before we went and put it out for public comment. It went out for public comment on October 16th through November 16th, and we did receive three comment letters, one from ECHO, and it was signed off by other homeless service providers, one from Texas Grande Legal Aid, and one from SAFE. All of those letters, comment letters, are included in your packet, along with a summary of how we address each one of those comments specifically, as that was in your packet under attachment 3. We reviewed all the comments and considered the comments, and several of the recommendations were incorporated into the admin plan as presented before you today. I was just going to highlight briefly some of the additional changes we made since the last time we spoke and went over the admin plan. One of those was Echo had asked that we consider adjusting our homeless preference slightly. We have the homeless preference. We've had it since 2016. And we reviewed that, and what I thought would be the best thing to adjust on that would be to 25% of those, when we do a voucher issuance, will go to the homeless preference, and removing the 100 cap. Looking back, we really, since 2016, in no year did we really get up to 100, because it depends on how many vouchers we issue. But one of the concerns is we had to track it every year, number one. And the other thing was, when families are pulled from the wait list, some of them are eligible, some are not, and we're doing it based on the number we were pulling from the wait list. So this will just, it'll be 25% for the voucher or the homeless preference, and that's what the change was that we made there. Another change that we made was in reviewing the project-based voucher rules, we have to provide a preference when someone has a project-based voucher, and this is regulatory. It's required that 12 months after they've had a project-based voucher, they can request to have a tenant-based voucher, and so we have to make that available to them. So I did make that change. I also removed the sorry about that. He'll stop barking in a minute. Sorry about that. The other thing is I removed, we had a preference for families that had 1115. It was a temporary assistance for those that were experiencing homelessness. That program is gone, so I removed that preference. Just a few other things is for oral briefings and informal hearings. I had that language that we could do those remotely in the previous version. However, since then, HUD issued a PIH notice that further defined what housing authorities needed to do to ensure equal access for those persons that are disabled or have limited English-speaking capabilities, so we added that language there. And then with regards to remote video inspections, HUD issued a notice recently, and I added additional language with regards to that, so we're in compliance with what HUD is requiring with regards to remote video inspections. Finally, for project-based vouchers, and that was in Chapter 17, I eliminated the 400-unit cap that we had in the admin plan. We are able to project-base up to 20% of our vouchers. I had a discussion with all of you last November. 20% of all our vouchers would be like 1,223 that we could potentially project-base. Currently, we're project-basing 91. 58 of those are VASH vouchers. And this upcoming year, as I had mentioned at last November's meeting, we want to go ahead and project base an additional 200 vouchers. A part of those will be VASH vouchers. But we want the flexibility to be able to make decisions. We'll always bring them to you to discuss before we go out with a request for proposal. But we want that flexibility to remove that 400-unit cap, which was in Chapter 17. Those are just a general summary, and I'll go ahead and open up for any questions. And it looks like Commissioner Duncan Hall has a question.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me, Lisa?
I can hear you great. Thank you.
I was reading the comments from the various letters that we received, and the one from SAFE really struck me because I know how serious it is becoming, and that is homelessness for mothers and their children, often based upon domestic violence issues. And they were asked, could we prioritize that type of homelessness?
and I had no answer to that in my own mind. And I'm wondering, is this one of the criteria that you're using? And if so, where does it fit into the priority scale?
Yeah, so currently, with the preferences that we have a preference, a homeless preference, like I mentioned earlier. So 25% of any vouchers that we issue will go to the homeless preference. But we also have a preference just for families in general. So I felt that it's sort of being covered with those, the current preferences we have in place. It's difficult, I understand, and I appreciate the letter that was provided by SAFE. However, you know, I'm not, I feel like I get a lot of additional requests to add additional preferences, and currently we do have, I feel like the preference we have would cover that population.
But has this population been growing? From what I have read, some national, I don't think I've seen anything local regarding the increase in the number of children who are homeless, and we certainly are going to have to worry about what happens at the end of this month if they don't get, the families don't get some kind of relief. But I worry particularly about children who are homeless and the impact that has on their lives, and I just don't know what, if anything, we can do.
Well, and so for SAFE, as well as for families with children that maybe are living at the Salvation Army, they're going to all get referred through the coordinated assessment, and all of the those that would be able to get an access to the homeless preference are going to be referred to us through the coordinated assessment, so they'd be able to apply through the coordinated assessment, which ACCO oversees that. That one entry point.
But do we know whether we're serving or we have accommodated that need? Do we know how many homeless children and mothers are out there that are just homeless and out there?
You know, I don't have that information for you today. And, you know, in terms of responding, I don't really have it before you today in terms of what the percentage is, how many there are. I don't have that information, but I could definitely get it back to you with that information.
It's fair to say, though, that it's far more than we serve. And absolutely, you know, there's no doubt that we're seeing reports of increased domestic violence, sexual violence, and violence generally going up as a combination of pandemic-related issues and as a combination of changing in how we approach, you know, safety in this community and in other communities. What we've tried to do is we've tried to provide preferences for a carefully selected group of need in the city. So we have families with children that get a preference. We have transitioning homeless that get a preference. We have seniors who get a preference. We have disabled who get a preference. And it's hard to say to put one over another, because each has a really appropriate and justifiable, and we, you know, are examples of need and the best in our community who deserve a preference. It reserves to be sort of jumped to the top of the list. So we try to accommodate, you know, those four, and we're really proud to. And I think our sense is that those who identify as transitioning homeless with children are coming in with already a preference, and we're glad and we want that. And likewise, you know, families with children who aren't coming through, who aren't experiencing homelessness per se, but just have a housing need. They may be, you know, couch surfing, or they may be, you know, living in other less than desirable situations and have a need. They too get a preference. It's hard to judge need. So we try to spread this resource as limited as it is all around. I will give a shout out to Lisa that, you know, the fix to that, Commissioner Duncan Hall, is what Lisa's committee at NARO has been advocating for, which is a concept called vouchers for all. Knowing now that there's so much need in the community, you know, it's very painful as housers to see a list of, you know, thousands of people just sitting there for years on end. And so being able to provide a housing voucher now is something that the budget estimators think is going to be, $20 to $30 billion. But in the scheme of it, it's cheap compared to all the other things that we need to do to support families who remain homeless, who remain inadequately housed, who remain, who struggle with debt. So Lisa's on the front end of trying to address some of that issue through her housing committee at NARO and through other leadership roles that she plays, but also, in a more practical level here today, knowing that we've got a lot of different pictures of need and trying to meet those needs, equally. Because the board, I know, has said that other populations are vital to the lifeblood of this community too. So it's, but we are giving more emphasis and more oomph to homelessness because it is critical, and that's why we're asking clearance to project base. We think we can help more families that are homeless, through that kind of long-term investment and other things that we can do, to ensure that, 25% of every draw goes to the homeless, or those identifying as transitioning homeless. And we'll continue to remain active with ECHO and with other groups to try to see what we can do to do more for them and for our folks, our partners who, deal with domestic violence. I mean, Julia Spann I've known her for years, and one of you have, and just one of the finest people I've ever worked with. And we love our support of SAFE, and anything we do to help them, we very much would like to. The project-based vouchers, last thing I'll say, is an avenue that potentially could help SAFE along with these other partners as well to expand the base of housing. But it's a longer-term play, a longer-term investment, and not a quicker fix.
Okay, thank you. And I'm not going to call you Grinch for Christmas.
That's
good.
It's
Mike is speechless.
No, I'm in agreement with you. It's I'll go on the soapbox for a second. It's shameful that we have so much need in this community, and yet we can't get the money and resources from the haves to the have-nots. It's funny that we're the wealthiest nation on earth, and we can't get the resources shifted so that we put resources into where we could really improve the lives of children and other vulnerable populations like you're talking about. And as housers, it's painful to not be able to not be able to do that.
I agree.
Any other questions?
Commissioner Avasola, did I see you raise your hand? Go ahead.
I'm waiting for the...
I can hear you.
There we go. No question, just a comment. Thank you, Lisa, for everything that you're doing. It's really I read it, and I am greatly appreciated to you for doing as much as you are. And like Mr. Gerber said, we wish you could house everybody, especially with kiddos. And thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I think there may be some public comment.
All right. I believe there's public comment. I believe I see Bree Williams with ECHO. And so at this time, we will invite the public to speak on this issue before the board takes action. So, Ms. Williams, if you want to speak, you're on mute right now.
Star 6 to unmute. Please enter star 6 if you'd like to unmute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank y'all so much for the patience. These digital platforms, it's like you have to continuously pivot. So I just want to express our gratitude from ECHO. And, as Lisa mentioned, we were really just delighted to see a real coalition built this year around our comments to the admin plan changes, you know, in partnership with LifeWorks, Integral Care, Front Steps, Salvation Army, the Safe Alliance. I'm probably missing folks now, of course, and I'm listing them off the cuff. But again, just grateful for the willingness to kind of review how our homeless preferences reflect in the admin plan, and as well as this increased flexibility to project-based subsidies. We think that could be a really critical strategy to help us get more dedicated units on the ground. And then I would also call attention to the last request that we had, which was to take a hard look at the criminal screening practices for the Housing Choice Voucher Program. And I know this can be a little bit of a controversial conversation, but, you know, I know that we're all partners in the work. And to be quite honest, the criminal screening practices create pretty profound barriers for the folks that we're trying to serve in homelessness, including, I will also point out, including families with children. They are not excluded from barriers that are faced by those criminal screening practices. And so, you know, we were hoping to come together as a coalition to, you know, have a conversation around what will help us move the needle most effectively in our community to end homelessness. And again, centering that around mitigating barriers to rental assistance, understanding that that's a different conversation than asset management and protection as it relates to criminal screening practices. So again, just would love to invite and encourage this group to take a long, hard look at what those practices are and where the data is to support them and how we can, you know, move forward as a community to become as housing first as we can be. Yeah, I'll leave it there in case there's any questions.
Chair, I would just say that we really appreciate the partnership with ECHO, and we appreciate Bree's leadership. She's been at ECHO for a number of years and brings a lot of technical know-how and skill to the table, and we look forward to engaging. She's absolutely right. For us to really solve homelessness in this community, it's going to require really reducing the barriers to finding housing for those who have criminal backgrounds and making sure that they get a fair chance to find housing. That said, we've got to balance that out with other interests in our program. But there's certainly a lot of need, and we have a role to play. And so we look forward to being part of that discussion. So thanks, Bree.
Absolutely.
Mike, I've got a quick question.
Sure.
Now, Lisa, on the folks that we give preference to that are homeless, how are they able to pay? How does the payment work? We've got people that qualify for Section 8. These folks, do they also have to qualify? They just get moved up in preference?
Yeah, so they, yes, good question. They do have to qualify, so they're going to go through admissions like anybody else, but they're going to be referred through the coordinated assessment system. So we work with ECHO. When we do a voucher issuance, Laura Badai, the admissions director, will contact ECHO and say, you know, send us the next, you know, this is how many for this next voucher pool. And then they're going to go through the regular eligibility screening criteria for the Housing Choice Voucher Program.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Commissioners, we would ask your approval of resolution number 2684, adopting the Housing Choice Voucher Administrative Plan.
Before we do that, Mike, let's back up. Is there anyone else from the general public who would like to speak on this issue before the board takes action? Hearing none at this time, the chair will entertain a motion to approve resolution number 2684. Motion by Commissioner Duncan-Howell, you have a question? You're on mute. You still on? Okay, there you go.
Going to support the resolution.
Okay. Commissioner Duncan-Howell makes a motion to approve resolution number 2684, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Thank you, Chairman.
We would like to suggest going down to item number 7, just so we're knocking out all of our plans and updates to those plans. Item number 7 is resolution number 2686, approving submission of the 2121 Public Housing Authority annual plan and our update to the 5-year plan, and being able to submit those to HUD. Kelly Crawford has been taking the lead on that. Kelly?
Good afternoon, commissioners and guests. The annual plan takes into consideration most of our major policies, and it's a document that puts us and our policies forward to the public so they can see what's important and how we handle our housing funds. It used to contain information related to public housing as well as housing choice vouchers. Because we are now free of public housing and have converted all of our housing to PBRA under RAD, we no longer report on that via our annual plan. So this year is the first year you'll see that it just reports on Section 8, our housing choice voucher programs, with a quick update at the beginning to show how we've disposed of that housing and the number of units converted. So with that in mind, really everything that you just heard from Lisa is now reflected in our public housing annual plan as well. That's why we do this at the same time each year, and we're paired, her first and then me second, for that presentation. So I would suggest that you've heard the updates to the plan. If you've reviewed it and you have any questions about that, I'm here to entertain any of those questions and answer those.
Kelly, do we think that HUD will change the name?
From public housing?
Yeah.
No. And yes. Because public housing does administer Section 8 housing choice vouchers, so that's still relevant, I think, even if we are only a Section 8 public housing. That's still relevant.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
Lisa, Chair, I'm not sure if there's any public comment on this item.
Let's go ahead and ask, so is there anyone, does any of the board members have any additional questions of Ms. Crawford? If not, I will ask if there's any public comment, any citizen who would like to comment on this item before we take a vote. Hearing none, the chair will entertain a motion to approve resolution number 2686 to approve the 2021 Public Housing Authority annual plan for updates to the 5-year plan.
So moved.
Motion by Commissioner Carrington, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Thank you.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, we'll go back to item number 5, which is an update on AHC acquisition and development programs. Ron, is there anything under the general discussion that you'd want to highlight in the HACA agenda? And then we can go over to, or we can just jump over to Austin Affordable at this point and over to Commissioner Carrington.
We can. I just was going to share that, just to give you an update, that this week we've closed 2 of our acquisition properties that you approved several months ago. Broadstone Apartments, which is on Palmer Lane and Anderson Mill, closed on Tuesday. And as we speak right now, the Melrose Trail Apartments, which we are partnering with our friends at the Austin Housing Conservancy, has, I'm waiting for the official, yes, we've closed, but it looks like everything's done and ready to go. So this week we've done closed two more properties, and on the acquisition side with those two, and so the total number of acquisition units now with our partners in our portfolio that we own on our own is now at 4,200 units. applicants. So we're proud of that. So I just want to let you know that. And we're still doing very well on rent collections and still very strong. Leasing activity has slowed a little bit coming into Christmas, but we're still doing leases. And so far I don't have anything really horrible to tell you, so we'll keep our fingers crossed to get through the new year and get into 2021.
Ron, how is the restoration, the fire restoration going at Terracina?
Very well, actually. The one unit was completely gutted and rebuilt from scratch, that where the fire was originally started. The rest of the building has now been cleared and cleaned and smoke related. Any smoke items or anything that the smell from the smoke and that there was not any water damage, we were fortunate there, has been mitigated. And we're getting those units ready back for occupancy. All those residents were obviously relocated and taken care of. And fortunately, we have extremely good rent property insurance. Our loss of rents for those units are being covered, and so that's a great thing. We should be ready to be back on board for that whole building probably by February, is what our goal is.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner, I would also just say, I think most board members knew we had a fire that in a unit about a month and a half ago at our property at Terracina. It's located at Mopac and Far West and Steck, kind of in that area. And everyone was fine except for one gentleman who actually lived across the courtyard who had some underlying health conditions. And he was overcome by what he saw, and he had either a cardiac event or a stroke, but he's recovering. He went to rehabilitation and he's recovering well. It's interesting that Saturday that it happened, Saturday night, Sunday morning, we were talking with Councilwoman Allison Alter, and we were talking about the needs of the residents, and the management company that we work with, apartment management professionals, Rex Jones and his team, that really are an extension of HACA in so many ways. They were out there. I went out there. I went out there with one of my daughters and the next day. And, to see the professionals out there, every family was tended to that the night of the fire, right? The fire happened, late in the night. Each person, each family, wound up at a nearby hotel. We went just to the nearest hotel. There was a Marriott there that they housed people at. And then the next day, we were able to relocate people to several of our other properties or to give them choices about alternative accommodations for a period of time. And when we were talking to Councilwoman Alter, she was like, well, I've talked to the neighbors. They want to bring food. They want to bring, clothes. What can they bring? And Ron and I were in a little bit of a loss for words, and one of basically what was said is if you've had something, if you have a fire, and God forbid, you want to have it in a property that's managed by AHC and by AMP, because the way they leaped into action, and the great care that they took with those families to get people moved, that night, not waiting until the next morning, but that night was really extraordinary. And Ron, was out there, a whole lot of that time. And so I really just want to give a shout out to, the kind of people, you've got working with out at the properties. It's not a detached management. It's a very engaged day in and day out kind of thing. So thanks, Ron. Thanks for your leadership on that. So we move on to, agenda for, is that anything else by way of updates?
Suzanne may have something on our new construction portfolio real quickly.
Yeah, real quickly, I just wanted to let y'all know our Elysium project, which is North Mopac, just south of Parmer. We are leasing units. We're just almost 100% complete on construction. And then our Granada project, which is just south of there off of 35, kind of close to Georgia Manor, we'll start leasing units or occupying. Actually, we're already leasing. We'll start occupying units in January. So we're real excited to have those almost complete.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, with your concurrence, we'll jump over to the board meeting for Austin Affordable PSC, and we'll pick up that agenda and discuss El Prado at Estancia.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. Do we want to go to the PFC, or are we going to Austin Affordable Housing Corporation?
We'll go to Austin Affordable House. We'll go to Austin first. Affordable PFC, Inc.
First? Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
We've already been called to order, and a quorum was certified.
The first item on the agenda for the Austin Affordable PFC is citizen communication. Is there anyone from the public that would like to comment on this item? If not, then we will move to the consent item, which is the approval of the board minutes of the board meeting held on November the 19th, 2020. I ask for a motion.
So moved.
Thank you, Chairman Ritchie. Second? Was it Mary?
I think it's Tyra.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, then I ask for a motion to approve the minutes of the November 19th, 2020 board meeting, PFC meeting. All those in favor?
You already got the motion.
Yeah, we
got to have a vote. Thank you. Thank you.
Aye.
I don't know what your all's desks look like, but mine is a mess. I'm having a hard time.
Thanks for sharing that, because I thought it was just me.
you have company, Chairman Ritchie. our one action item then for the PFC is a possible action on resolution 00080, declaring intent to issue bonds to provide up for multifamily residential development for persons of low and moderate income. It's El Prado at Estancia, prescribing certain terms and conditions of such bonds, authorizing the filing of an application for an allocation of private activity bonds with the Texas Bond Review Board, and containing other provisions related to the subject. And Suzanne, is this yours or is
yes,
this
wrong?
Suzanne,
yes.
Okay. Suzanne, take it away.
Madam Chair, board members, Mr. Gerber, staff, and guests, it's my pleasure to present to you today El Prado at Estancia. This is the first time I'm presenting this project to you, and it is just to get our foot in the door so that we can start planning the design and everything that it takes to get it to the finish line. We will be presenting this down the road again twice before you approve the closing. It looks like we're shooting for our closing end of 2021, beginning of 2022, so we've got quite a bit of time. This one is a partnership with the NRP Group. We have already partnered with them on tax credit properties, which is what this one is, with Harris Ridge and Loyola Lofts. This one is going to be very similar to those two projects. We are going to ask for $48 million in bond inducement. The project has 318 units, and it's got a very healthy mix of 1, 2, 3, and 4-bedroom units. So this is truly going to be a family-oriented property, and we're real excited about it. All units will be at 60% area median family income, and I did include a chart with that information in the PowerPoint with the Austin Affordable book, because Commissioner Duncan Hall did request that last meeting.
I appreciate that.
Great. The property is located south of Onion Creek Parkway and north of FM 1327 off of 35. I like the location because just north of the location is also South Park Meadows, which is a huge retail center. So they'll have access to all of their needs very closely. This is located in an Austin limited purpose annexation, which basically means they get almost all of the services of if they were in the city limits. They did this when they zoned the master plan and with the intention that when they're about 50% to 75% complete with the master plan construction, they'll go in and add it to the actual city limits. It is 15.3 acres. It's located in the Estancia Hill Country Master Development. And this development already has some luxury apartments, market rate, single family homes. There's some already built and some that there's another subdivision that they're building in there. And then it's a future branch of the Texas Children's Hospital, which our apartment is really close, almost beside it. So we're excited about that. Our project will be the only affordable housing project in this master plan. So I think it's we definitely need that affordability right there. With NRP's projects that we've partnered with, they always include a big children's study, playroom, community center type thing. And we do have after-school programs in those rooms. So Bridget Harris Ridge has a huge one. I don't know if any of y'all have been out there. I think Commissioner Carrington had been out there for the grand opening. But it's one of the things that we really love about partnering with NRP. And because we have a lot of the 3 and 4 bedrooms, it's really important to have those children's services.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's about it. I would love to answer any questions that y'all may have.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am. Mary?
Yes. Where did the name Bravo come from? Who chose it? That's my mother's
NRP
maiden name.
NRP chose it. Yeah, our developer partner chose it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Okay.
However, if we have a difference of opinion on names, we can offer up our own, and we have on some cases.
No, I just thought it was unusual to ask my mother's maiden name, and it's you don't hear it too often.
Well, then that's a good thing. You're in favor of it, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. My grandfather was the first Hispanic man here in Austin to serve on the grand jury in Travis County.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And his name is Juan Prado.
Are there any other questions for Suzanne related to El Prado?
I've got a question. So, Suzanne, this Estancia Hill Country Master Development, that's the one that's south of 35 South?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
And again, Suzanne, we'll be seeing them. This will come back several times.
Yes, at least twice.
And just to address issues of affordability for board members, this property, this tool, the 4% bond program, 4% tax credits and bonds, is targeting 60%. Not 80, as we're going to talk about in just a couple minutes, but 60%. And then there is the ability to have some units be at 80 and some units be lower at 30 and 40. Is that right, Suzanne?
Well, this one we're more than likely going to do 100% at 60.
At 60 on this one?
Because we're just in the planning stages, it could change to where we do the income averaging where – we do have, you know, several different AMIs we serve, but as of right now, we're looking at 100% at 60 AMI.
Okay.
So we'll continue to watch the market, but this is a tool where we do have some of that flexibility to do the income averaging and try to drive down to some of those lower income units if we wish to. And
right.
I think the board has needed a preference over time to try to do a few more of the 30% and 40% units and 50s if we can.
Yeah, and we've got plenty of time to discuss that and plan because, like I said, this is just us getting our foot in the door, and this is the beginning stages of everything.
Any more questions about El Prado at Estanza? Okay, if not, then I would like to have a motion to approve resolution 0080. And as Suzanne says, this is the first step. Okay, thank you, Mary. Is there a second?
There's a second.
Okay, thank you, Carl.
Chair.
Yes, sir.
Just make sure you ask for if there's any public comment, just for the record.
Okay. Is there any public comment related to El Prado at Estanza? If not, then I think we are ready for a vote. All those in favor of approving resolution 00080?
Aye.
You say aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any opposed? Okay, thank you.
Chair Carrington, for those of us just keeping track of who, could you say again who offered the motion and who seconded?
I think, Mary, didn't you offer the motion?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Tyra or Carl seconded.
Tyra seconded. Thank you. Madam Chair, I don't believe there's a need to go into executive session. There's no additional items or reports to come before AAPFC, and we would suggest that this board agenda be adjourned.
So I at 1:38.
Madam Chair, I make a motion to adjourn the Austin Affordable Public Facilities Corporation.
Thank you, Mr. Ritchie. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Gerber, do we now go to the South Congress PFC or do we go back?
No, ma'am, to South Congress PFC.
Okay.
Or do we want to do Austin Affordable and then close out El Prado?
We can close out El Prado and then also close out Austin Affordable Housing Corporation because there's no other
agenda
item to be there.
That's fine.
Okay. So what are we doing?
Going to Austin Affordable Housing.
We're going to go to Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. We've already called the AAC to order and certified a quorum. We're up to Citizens Communications on, again, the AAC agenda.
Okay. Okay. My board book came apart, folks.
No worries.
I apologize, but it's come apart. So, Ron, I believe this was your item, if I remember correctly, when I was reviewing my materials.
Actually, we'll let Suzanne finish this one up. This is her Vildia Estancia.
Okay.
Yeah, should we take up the minutes first as we're in a new board meeting?
Yeah. All right. So, Madam Chair, let's go to Citizens Communications first. Is there any member of the public wishing to deliver Citizens Communications to the board? Hearing none, we can go to the consent item. Consent item number one is presentation, discussion, and possible action on the board minutes for the board meeting held on November 19th, 2020.
I make a motion to approve the minutes as printed.
Second.
Commissioner Ritchie approves and Commissioner Apostolo seconds. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 All opposed? The board minutes are approved. Action item number, which is number two, is resolution number 176 from the Board of the Directors of Austin Affordable Housing Corporation authorizing AAHC to execute any and all documents or to take other action that's necessary or desirable to participate in the housing tax credit application for El Prado at Estancia. Ms. Schwertner?
Yes, and this is, you know, with the 4% tax credit program, it goes hand in hand with the bonds. So this would be the resolution that we approved to start the process of submitting an application to TDHCA for the 4% tax credit application.
would be happy to answer any other questions you have on El Prado at Estancia.
Suzanne, how long will that 4% application take?
It usually takes, I think, 150 days before we get approval.
Okay, so that's about 5 months.
Yeah, so we're doing the resolutions now because we kind of have to be strategic on when we submit our bond application and when we submit our tax credit application. Even though we'll be closing probably, you know, very end of 2021, beginning of 2022, it does take a long time for, you know, to get everything ready, prepared for the applications and actually submit them. So we want to make sure that we go into 2021 ready for when the timing is right.
Okay. Thank you.
Any more questions concerning the El Prado at Estancia? Okay. Do I hear a motion that we approve resolution 00176?
I move approval.
Thank you, Mary. Is there a second?
Second.
Second. Thank you. Thank you, Tara. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any opposed? Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, there's no executive session needed. There are no reports to be delivered. We would suggest adjourning Austin Affordable Housing Corporation.
I would suggest that we adjourn at 1:44 on December the 17th. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you. Now do we go to the PFC?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay. And that agenda has already been called to order. That meeting has been called to order and a quorum certified. So we're up to citizens' communication.
So if anyone from the public like to comment on the PFC agenda or the item in front of the item in front of us.
Please enter star 6 to unmute.
So there is, okay. Public comment on this item?
Chuck, it looks like you're muted.
Andrew, was there anyone from the public?
I've got a couple of unnamed callers. Looks like one person has unmuted, but I'm not hearing anything coming from them. They may be muted on their phone itself.
Any public comment related to the PFC, South Congress PFC? Okay. Then our first item is the minutes, the consent item of the minutes that board meeting held on June the 18th, 2020. Any comments on the minutes before we take a motion? Okay. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes?
Move approval.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The action item in front of the PFC is resolution 0005, the Board of South Congress Public Facilities Corporation, to acquire a leasehold interest in certain real property, sublease the land to Highland Village Apartments, and execute any further documentations as necessary or desirable, including any financing to facilitate the development of the project. This one, I believe, is Ron. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
other commissioners, Mr. Gerber, staff, guests. I'm presenting to you the resolutions that pertain to the Highland Village development. Actually, there'll be two resolutions, one here that we'll talk about here in a second, and then your second resolution will be on the HACA agenda, basically ratifying anything that the South Congress PFC approves through that board. So that's the two resolutions you'll be seeing before you shortly. Resolution 02685, resolution 0005 on the South Congress PFC is, as the chair pointed out, is the resolution to actually execute and carry forward all the necessary things to facilitate the development. I wanted to back up just a quick second for you all and maybe explain to you why we have a South Congress PFC and why we have an affordable PFC, just to recall, to jog your memories. Once we started doing public facility corporation transactions, we decided, our lawyers and our counsels decided that it was good for us to separate our Austin Affordable PFC, which is only does bond issuance. It doesn't do real estate. It doesn't hold anything. It doesn't have any other assets in it. And so we formed South Congress PFC back when we passed our first PFC deal with NRP, which was the deal on South Congress. That's how we got the South Congress PFC. So what we've decided to do is run all our public facility corporation transactions through the South Congress PFC to keep that arm's length transaction and separate from our bond issuance arm, which is Austin Affordable PFC. As far as the PFC structure goes, this what I'm going to present to you here shortly is identical to what you approved back in June with the NRP group to do on Vega. And unlike a traditional deal, the housing authority always owns the land and then the ground leases it back to the partnership. Under the statute for the PFCs, the actual public facility corporation owns the land and the improvements. And then that ground leases that back to the development. So that's basically the biggest difference between the two structures that I thought I would share with you. When we first looked at this opportunity over a year and a half ago, when we started exploring this development, it was very apparent in this area that was up and coming and so much development and so much transition going around the ACC campus and the conversion of the mall that there wasn't any affordability at all. As of right now, there are no other affordable properties. It's all market rent that surround the ACC campus. And an NRP presented us an opportunity to try to correct that in some ways and come in with the PFC structure and offer some affordability out here to meet probably the demand, and there certainly is a demand for affordability in that area. What this PFC structure development will provide is at a minimum 50% of the units will be below 80% area median income, and the other units could be therefore at market rent. Obviously, we're going to target a more a robust, affordable count on the unit numbers, and I think we will once this project gets up and developed. For the project itself, you have 299 units. We have 213 one-bedroom, one-baths, 81 two-bedroom, two-baths. And if you look at your PowerPoint, you may see it might say 53 bedroom, two baths. And when it actually, what that is 5 3 bedroom, two baths. There was not a space between the two. So I apologize for that. It might be a little confusing, but we will have 5 3 bedrooms on the property. As I mentioned, this development is with the public facility arm of the NRP group. This is our third, of three public facility corporation deals that we have been working on with them. Just to give you a little background on the Highland Village area, the master developer, the master planner of all that land out there is a company called Red Leaf Properties. Some of you may be familiar with Matt Whelan, who used to be with Catullus. Matt is the founder and principal of Red Leaf. It's a local, they're local here in Austin. And they've been in business since about 2009. We don't have much interaction with them. They're the master developer. What they're doing in this transaction, which was similar to Vega, instead of selling the land to us, they're leasing the land to us. And then what we'll do, what we do is we turn around and do a sublease to our development arm or our development partnership group for 99 years. At the end of 99 years, that land will then revert back to the master developer. Similar to St. Andrews, and at the end of 99 years, Vega will revert back to St. Andrews. But we get the benefit of 99 years of affordability and 99 years as long as we want to stay in the deal where we'll be participating in that project. So that's how that goes. I wanted to make sure that you were aware that there's going to be plenty of really cool amenities on this site. We're going to have a very, 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 very fantastic swimming pool. And I've seen the designs, a 7,000 square foot clubhouse with a lot of working space, very spacious, very wide open, a very large fitness center, a dog spa. I think you all know that this is on the Highland Rail stop. So the stop is right there, which is very advantageous for people that need to go into downtown who live out here and can come back and forth. The other thing I wanted to make sure that you're aware of is that the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, as a subsidiary, is putting no dollars into this transaction. So we're not putting any money into it. The other neat discount we're offering on this property is for all our employees of the Austin Community College. They will be given rent discounts. They will be given the rental rate, and then they will get another discount on top of that of 1 month's free rent, which would be, if you prorated that over a 12-month lease term, that comes out to probably a little over $100 to $120 a month off their lease, which would be already affordable. So that was a good give for that NRP has agreed to do to give something back to the ACC employees. We hope that in the years to come that we'll be able to actually step in and buy this property outright after it's developed and we can maybe do some deeper dives and some deeper affordability. But it was a project where we looked at. And while we feel very good that we're going to be hitting some 60s and between that 60 and 80% AMI, our voucher holders are also going to be accepted as well. We hope down the road of life, as this project materializes and comes out of completion and stabilization, typically NRP's model is to sell the leasehold to a new owner or new buyer in a period of time. And we've got a very strong first right of refusal in place to where we can step in and purchase this with new partners. And so that's kind of our ultimate goal, hopefully down the road. But it's going to be a very beautiful project in a great up and coming area. We're excited about our partnership. We've done two with them. We feel very good about how those two partnerships and those two projects are developed and coming, and they're very open and communicative and keeping us in the loop on everything. Suzanne's actually more involved on the day-to-day transactions of Vega and SoCo than I am, because she monitors the construction piece. But it's a very nice project. We're really excited about it, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have pertaining to this development.
Any questions for Ron? I would like to offer again, is there anyone from the public before we open this for discussion and a vote? Is there anyone from the public that would like to comment on 0005 Highland Village? Okay. Well, I'm pretty excited about this. I mean, anyone that, and Tyra, I would hope you are also, anyone that has driven by what's going on at the old Highland Mall, now ACC Highland, it's a very, very exciting redevelopment, reincarnation for that part of town and for Austin Community College. So, I'm thrilled that we are going to be involved in a development that's going to have an affordable component. So, good work, Austin Affordable staff. Is there any discussion before we take a vote? Before I take a motion and a vote?
Commissioner Carrington, I think Commissioner Duckett Hall may want to chime in here for a moment, but I would just like to add that it's not as deep of affordability as all of us would like. You know, they are using a tool that sets aside half of the units at 80%. So it's not the 60s, it's not the 30s. And we're using a provision of law that basically makes it so that we don't go and have to use low-income housing tax credits or private activity bonds, which is what we just did on El Prado and what we've done in most cases. And I think it's important just to acknowledge that fact that we're serving right now folks at a slightly higher income level. At this property, as we are at Vega and as we are at South Congress, these are really three higher opportunity areas that we're in that we would not have been able to get into if we weren't willing to accept the 50% at 80 affordability approach. The landowners and the interests that are in and around the area did not want to serve deeper affordability, unfortunately, I think. However, over time, we expect that we will be the owner of the property. How many years from now, Ron? 10?
No, probably sooner than that. I would say probably year 4 or 5.
And that'll give us more flexibility to drive the affordability further to the levels that we would like to see, more of the 60s and even lower in some cases. It also opens up the importance of for vouchers. This property will accept vouchers, which so few properties in the Highland Mall area do. And so it's exciting, but I also don't want to say we got the whole loaf. We got half a loaf. But over time, it's a long-term affordability play, and we'll continue to drive down to those lower levels that we know that the board and to which this agency is committed. So I just wanted to own up to that. We're not coming in at this property at the same 60% level, which is lower and that we really feel more pleased about serving at our other properties. So I just want to acknowledge that. And it's certainly not as low as we go in our acquisition and long-term preservation properties as well. So we continue to work to drive the rents down or to hold them steady as the market improves and rent increases move away from us. We go slower in how we do rent increases. So I just wanted to make sure you understood that as a dynamic of using this tool, the Public Facility Corporation tool, for this particular development. Ron, anything I missed, or Tyra, or Commissioner Duncan Hall, anything you want to add?
I'll be happy for Commissioner Duncan Hall to chime in a second, but I do want to say one thing. I mean, when you think about half of the 153 units are going to be affordable, minimum, and we're targeting right now in our projections that about 71% of these units will actually be below 80% by the time this development is finished. You can't possibly sit and wait for 153 applicants that are exactly at 79.9% of AMI. We have units that will trickle down to 60. For instance, our one bedrooms are going to start at $1,025 and then be discounted for utility allowances, which should bring it under $1,000 for a one bedroom. The two bedrooms will be starting at $1,300. If you equate for a utility allowance, those units will be driven down to probably below $1,100 for a two bedroom. So we will touch some of that 60% affordability. And so it's just going to be a matter of who comes in first. I think while we won't have all of them at 60, and Ms. Scriver, you're exactly correct, we're going to be hitting people between that 70 and 79. Can't take 80. It has to be below 79. And those will be households qualified by numbers of households. So So, but I do agree in the idea that as the years go on, this will be driven. We will be increasing as rents go up, and we maintain those affordability units, and it's what we call naturally occurring affordable housing. As we hold rents steady and rents increase, more of those fall into those piles of affordability. So, but we are super excited about the development.
Tara, did you have some comments?
Well, yes, I do. And
seriously, we should.
Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
My mic is on. Okay.
Yes.
I did have several concerns about the affordability of this project. My first concern had nothing to do with ACC, with HACA, but ACC. And I was concerned that ACC would work with developers that provided no affordability in property at all, and that everything was going at market rate or above market rate. And for a community college, I was not happy with that policy. Nevertheless, the property is in a prime location, and it is going to be in a good location for those who will work in the city or around about because of the transportation availability. But I was of the mind that 80% was rather high, and I talked to both Mike and Ron about that, and which is why we're having this discussion in terms of what can one do to be somewhat affordable in a place that's not affordable, and the whole issue of mixed incomes, etc. So I am supporting the project with the concept in mind that if the rents are frozen and they're not raised, then that provides an element of affordability that we do not have at present. And I think that's about all I have to say about it. But Ron and Mike have spent a lot of time talking to me about this issue, and I do have a greater appreciation for it now than I had before.
And commissioners, I'll add one more thing real quickly. This was through an RFP process to get into this tract of land to build here. We competed with 27 for-profit developers that were going to build another market rent property here. So when you talk about, it's not like we went out on I-35 and Toll Road 130 and were able to secure a piece of land for minimal cost. The land price now is actually the ground lease that we have to pay is comparable to what it would be if this was 100% at market rent. So to drive down to the deep, deep, deep affordability, it's very difficult because we're forced, in order to get some affordability, we were forced to have to pay market rate prices. So, but we were fortunate enough to be to win that bid and be able to do this much affordability on this site and still make the project viable for our investors and for our lenders and for all of us, because there will be cash flow generated from this property as well. So I just wanted to let you know this wasn't some, you know, a bunch of nonprofits and a couple dollars here and there for the land. It was a very competitive process with a lot of major, major big players in the for-profit industry that build apartment complexes that were vying for this site. So we were fortunate that we were able to pull it away.
Thank you, Ron. Any other discussion, comments, questions before I take a motion for a vote? Okay, hearing none, then I would request a motion to approve resolution 00005.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Ritchie. And our second was?
Me.
Terry? Thank you. Any more discussion?
Is there a request for public comment?
Well, I had asked that earlier, but
okay.
Is there? Yeah. But I'll ask again. any public comment on this? Okay. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, hearing none. Motion passes. I do not believe, Mr. Gerber, that there's any need for an executive session. Is that correct?
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Okay.
All righty. Then that concludes the business for the South Congress PFC, and I will take a motion to approve the closing of the meeting at 2:07 on December the 17th.
So moved.
Thank you, Mary. Is there a second? Mara, was that you? Second? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
Then we closed meeting of the South Congress PFC. And thank you, Ron and Suzanne. I want to just follow up on the comments that you all made yesterday at the at our holiday party about the activity that's gone on this past year with Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. And I think as of yesterday, it was like 11 properties this year, with seven of them being new construction. So I think that's a phenomenal workload, a phenomenal amount of work that two people that two people are able to accomplish. So we thank you very much for the work that you're doing to increase the supply of affordable housing in Austin. So thank you.
Much appreciated. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Chairman, we'll return to item number 6 on the HACA agenda, which is resolution number 2685, a resolution authorizing HACA to take such actions as necessary or convenient to facilitate the development of Highland Village, a multifamily housing project here in Austin, Texas.
This is just a ratification that the we need that the Board of the Housing Authority as the parent ratifies and approves of the actions of the public of South Congress Public Facility Corporation for the same development of the Highland Village.
We have just taken a vote on this item. I will ask once again, is there anyone from the general public who would like to comment on this item? Hearing none, at this time, the chair will entertain a motion to approve resolution number 2685.
So moved.
Motion by Commissioner Carrington. Seconded by Commissioner Costolo. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Mr. Kerber, do we need to go into executive session for anything?
No, sir, we don't. The next section is just the reports. And I'd like to take just a few minutes, if I can, to cover a couple of items. A little bit of show and tell. I'd like to ask Andrea, if you would, to go ahead and queue up. One of the things that we've been really proud of is we'll do the RAD video first. Recently, the U.S. Department, not this one, but the other one, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, as you know, has really showcased HACA as a leader in RAD and the RAD transformation that we've been doing. They sent out to a national audience a video that was done recently about one of our residents who now lives at Shadow Bend, whose quality of life has been improved because of the decisions you all made as a board to do the conversion to RAD. So this one is about 3 minutes. And so I'd like to share it with you and know that our colleagues and boards across the country are seeing it. It's pretty exciting. And while we're waiting, anything you would highlight in it? Can't hear you. Or Sylvia, anything you guys would highlight in the video while we're holding for just a minute?
Well, I would just say that it's just exciting to see Miss Nelson, who's being highlighted in this RAD video, actually moved from Rosewood Courts over to Shadow Bend. So it has just been a complete 180 in terms of the quality of the housing product that she and her grandchildren now enjoy. And it's just very heartwarming to see the joy and being able to benefit from these wonderful investments and just critical investments in helping to improve the housing stock and in turn the quality of life for the families that we serve. So, Andrea, if you want to go ahead and roll that film.
My name is Winnie Nelson, and I have 8 grandkids. I live in Shadow Bend, and I've been a resident a little over 4 years. I lived in Rosewood Apartments. I had one child at the time. My daughter died. When she died 4 years ago, I took on 7 more. And we stayed in a 2-bedroom and 1 bath. And I thank God for where we are now in a 5-bedroom. We had to hang clothes off, going to the washing machine, trying to get this done and that with 8 kids. And now we have a washer and dryer. We have enough restrooms. It looked really nice and unique. It looked like a brand new home. And I really appreciate them for doing this for me and my family. They don't know how hard it is then, but it's great now. So I really appreciate where I'm at. I don't have no complaints. I have, 8 children. I have one that's getting ready to graduate. I have 3 girls that play sports in the championship right now in volleyball. 2 of my children in the 7th grade and the 5th grade are straight A and B students. And I have 2 more that wasn't doing good, and their grades is getting ready to go up, and I'm just working on them. And another thing is, I have my elementary kids. I can walk them to school. I like the community because of the quietness, the playground, and then they have activities in the center here at Shadow Bend. They have my 18-year-old, she was 16. They help her with a summer job. I love it because it makes me feel not just an apartment, it makes me feel like I have a home. And my kids, they love their room. There's so much closet space. And we have a big old playground with a cover on the top, and it looks so fancy. It's not about me at all. It's about the children. So if they're comfortable and we feel good about our place, and that's what makes me feel good.
I would say I'm proud of my family and also my grandmother because she, like, took, it was a big task to take 7 children. And us being 8 children in one home with her, it's a big task to handle that burden. So, and, like, she's always supportive and she always has our back through everything.
I feel like I didn't hit the lottery because of what happened with Gloria. That's right.
Commissioners, I remember being at a RAD meeting with Ms. Nelson. It was one of the first RAD meetings that we had at Shadow Bend. And I was standing in the back, and she was standing next to me, and she was very, very, she looked skeptical. There was a lot of skepticism back then. She was very skeptical, and she had a very, very stern look on her face. And I'll never forget, and I remember her so well, she heard washer dryer. And she jumped up and she squealed and she looked at me and she smacked me on the shoulder and she said, "Washer dryer." After that moment, she was sold. I'll never forget that. And every time I see her, she's so appreciative of what we got. I also remember Michael Roth telling me that we very seldom get 4-bedroom units come open. We have so few of them. And obviously if anybody needed a 4-bedroom, she did. And he remembers that when that tragedy struck her family and she lost, she lost her daughter, and got on the waiting list for a 5-bedroom coming from a 2-bedroom at Rosewood, the chances that something was going to come up were so slim. And he said it was like a miracle that a 5-bedroom just opened up for that family. So we're just so lucky. We're lucky to have her as a resident and a cheerleader. And I'm so proud that Rad was able to do that for her family.
It's hard that we can't be, one of the hardest parts about the pandemic is that we can't be together and actually, bring her in or take you to see her unit. We'll look forward to that, going back and you'll get to see in person all the amazing work that you all have spearheaded over this last year. So hard to believe I'm saying it, but that's what just happened. What you just saw is old news. Look at what we're going to move to now. The next thing is of course Rosewood. You all approved Rosewood, and starting in January, you'll see a major marketing effort to public officials to advance Rosewood Courts, and this is a piece of it. And I thought you might enjoy seeing the case that we intend to make. That now is the time for Rosewood.
There is concrete in my garden, but that here my grass won't grow. I've seen life grow around it. I gave it a name so you will know. This concrete is called Rosewood, and it kills the grass underneath. Its sweaty walls trap me inside like a jail cell. I can't breathe. In the heart of the concrete is memories of 1939. Let us preserve, ape, and recreate this concrete one good time.
I think the time is right. It's been the right time for a long time. Anything that was built or born in 1939 is not operating as it normally would have done. It makes it hard for my maintenance staff to actually repair things. They have to patch a lot of things. It's time out for patching. It's time to rebuild.
At Rosewood, at the time that they were built, segregation existed. It was also at a time when people with disabilities didn't have rights. The building codes were different. So smaller doors. It's really important that we look at what the needs are based on the age that we live in now.
Very small for a wheelchair. He bumped the doors a lot, and I scraped my feet and bumped my toes and my legs a lot, and I have to be very careful. I'm pretty sure anyone in a wheelchair would feel the same way.
We're behind time, you know. And we just want to upgrade our buildings to make it fair, just give us a fair chance as any other person.
I have a heating unit on the wall in my living room. I have to move out of my bedroom into the living room for the winter. During the summer, I had to move into my bedroom for the summer, because that's where the air conditioning unit was.
I couldn't imagine cooking on my stove, and right above me is a sewer pipe. And if that sewer pipe busts, how do I get to have a quality of life thinking that I'm providing for my child in a safe environment?
My vision is they shouldn't be ashamed to tell anyone I live at Rosewood. It should be I live at Rosewood Courts. So if someone were to drive by and see Rosewood, they'll say, oh, you know what? They used to be this old public housing site. And the housing authority thought that it was better for the Rosewood residents to have a better quality of life, and they made that happen.
When we talk about saving eight, we also have a portion of the slogan that says, leave room to create. So while we want to give homage to the past and celebrate it, we also want to build towards the future.
I am a straight A student, and I have been in Rosewood since I was 2 years old. I asked my mom, is it because we're poor that the air conditioner doesn't come through the vents? Is it because we're poor, every time something gets fixed, it just breaks again? And she says, we are not poor. We are blessed to have somewhere to stay and food in our stomachs. My mom wants better, and so do I. I am the future. I deserve the best.
Now is the time for Rosewood Apartments to be remodeled.
Now is the time for Rosewood.
Now is the time for Rosewood.
So get ready, board, because now is the time for Rosewood. It's been a long time coming, and we are excited to move this project forward, and we're excited by the humongous array of support that's coming together to make this development happen. I hope you like the videos, and hats off to Ken Bodden and to the team that helped piece those together. I agree. Sylvia, I know you had closing thoughts, and I'll add one last thought, and then we can adjourn.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Gerber. Actually, as you all have heard over these last 12 months, there's been a lot of activity, a lot of accomplishments that our agency has been able to achieve with your support, with your guidance. And just thought I would sort of refresh memories on just the top 10, kind of scratching the surface of everything that, that we've been able to accomplish this this year, in no particular order, but I'm just going to kind of rattle off the top 10. Number one, as you know, we are proud to be 100% RAD converted to the Project-Based Rental Assistance Program. Woo-hoo! That's great. Number two, zero audit findings for fiscal year end 2020. Yay. number three, a $15.1 million positive net position. That is phenomenal. Number four, a 104 score for CMAP with a deconcentration bonus. Yay. Number five, we also effectively administered a total of $14.1 million in emergency rental assistance for the city of Austin in Rent 1.0 and 2.0. We are fully paperless in our tenant files. Yay! Andrea's ecstatic on that. That was a long time coming, huge accomplishment. Number seven, we have a phenomenal Bringing Health Home program, and we stood up the resident and client support center in the flash of time and has been a huge asset to our residents and a lifeline for so many of our families. So that was great, great work. Number eight, we, through Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation, earned their ISO certification. And that illustrates consistency and quality assurance in SHCC's operations and processes, which really helps to provide a leg up on the rebid process. Number nine, Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. Oh, my gosh, they're on fire. I mean, 11 properties acquired through this year. That's phenomenal. And last but not least, a 0% premium increase on our medical and dental insurance for next year. Yay! Awesome. So just a quick recap of some great work that's happened over this last year, again, with the phenomenal staff that we have at HACA and all of our subsidiaries. And again, with your wonderful support and guidance throughout it all, we truly appreciate your leadership, your service, and your passion for what we do and for the mission that we do day in, day out. So thank you so much for all of your help and support and guidance throughout this very challenging and, as Webster's Dictionary says, unprecedented year. That's the word of the year. According to Webster.
Yeah. So
thanks, Sylvia.
Thanks, Sylvia.
I just wrap up by saying, you know, that the accomplishments are extraordinary, but it's the people that make the work here so wonderful. It's the colleagues and professionals and friends that I get to work with every day. It's a wonderful board who is very generous. You all are so generous with your thoughts and guidance. I really love the tough questions. Just as by way of example, you know, yesterday, you know, I got to sit with, you know, we got to chat with Tyra, and I've chatted with each of you at different points for periods of time to walk through tough issues. And most boards don't do that. Most people just don't care as much as you all do. And you've put your heart and soul into this, and it's matched by the heart and soul that the staff put in. But you guys set a great example at the top, and we really, really admire and respect the work that you all each do for this agency and the guidance you give to us. And then, of course, it's the residents and the families that we get to serve, and the privilege of being enmeshed in a community that really does care for people. We sometimes struggle to figure out exactly how to do that. But we always strive to do more. And next year, you can count and expect on your staff and your housing authority to be doing more. We're going to be doing more to figure out how we provide better qualities of life to residents through the transformation at Chalmers West and at Rosewood. And as we start planning, no doubt, for, you know, for other projects, we'll continue to acquire new properties, and we'll continue to enter into partnerships that you all have you know, encouraged us to pursue, so that we can deepen the base of affordable housing here in the city. We're going to continue to you see, the work here never even stops. Suzanne's right here bringing me documents right there to, you know, just even during a board meeting, it just doesn't stop. The productivity of AAC knows no bounds. But working to do more to preserve affordability and to increase affordability here in the city, to provide new services, to think outside the box. You know, you all spent a lot of time on that strategic plan. We've done some of it, but we haven't done anywhere near what we thought we'd do because, well, we all got sidetracked about 11 months ago. We're going to get back on track with that, and we're going to accomplish every one of those objectives. And so thank you for being on what I think has been the greatest professional and personal ride I've ever been on, and I'm just so joyful to be able to, you know, work with you all. I'm joyful that our staff, for the most part, has stayed safe and has handled a really difficult time about as well as we could. I'm joyful that, you know, that we not had to let a single person go because of because we didn't have work for them or needed to furlough them or, you know, anything else. We've been able to help our families with, you know, in a variety of ways. And I'm joyful that we've got an executive team that is tough as hell. I mean, Gloria Morgan going and pushing United Healthcare in the worst healthcare year back on their heels to go and get, you know, a 0% increase in health insurance, you know, was huge. You know, Ron pushing hard on some of these deals, saying, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. And you wouldn't believe the number of deals he turns away. You know, Lisa Garcia, you know, is in the middle of, you know, a fight, you know, with the Veterans Administration, you know, to be able to project-based vouchers. We wanted a project-based 100. They're probably going to make us project-based fewer than that. But I wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of the emails and phone calls that Lisa's on. And that's all happening during these, you know, during the board meeting. Ann Gass, hey, by the way, you're done with the 17 and a half properties. Close the 18th one, and by the way, at the same time, go ahead and run finance, and take care of that. And then Andrea, you know, in your spare time, go and make sure that all 240 team members can be fully functional from home or remotely, and that we don't miss a beat. And oh, by the way, at the same time, get the whole office to go paperless. So there's just been a few things here that have been kind of intense, and I want to just express again my deep admiration for an amazing team of people, all of you, from policymakers on our board to division leaders, you know, who are on this call and many who are not. Even on the worst day, this is again the best place to work. And I thank you all, and I wish everyone a very happy holidays.
Thank you. So and Sylvia, I thought that was really great. I've got a couple suggestions, and these are just merely suggestions, and you can figure out whether you can take them or not. But what I would recommend is that top 10 list that Sylvia read out, I would take that and do kind of a little small narrative, a couple sentences above it, say something about, you know, although 2020 was challenging, look what we accomplished, and maybe either put it on the website or find a way to put it digitally somewhere where employees can see it when they log on to whatever they log on, so that, you know, on any given day when they're frustrated, they realize that, you know, you just keep fighting, you stay in the fight, you keep pushing, because look at the pandemic is once every 100 years, and look what we accomplished by continue to push and fight. These 10 things. Because I'm not sure if everybody, and I'm not sure whether the maintenance guys know what these are the top 10 things we've done, or whether everybody's in Lisa's shop, because everybody kind of works in a silo. But to see what we as an agency have accomplished, these top 10 things, I mean, that's impressive. And I think it's something that they all should see in some form or fashion. So, I mean, that would be my recommendation to you. But again, you know, you may have some other ideas. But
no,
I just
think, no, well. We were thinking the exact same thing about, and Sylvia was just saying, I'm going to write that up, and how useful. It's really important to share the message.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm not, and, you know, to the general public, whether you put it on the website or put it, you know, I know you have kind of an intra website where the employees can go and see stuff, but, you know, there's a way to post it there for them to see it and just, you know, to remind themselves of what they're able to accomplish by just sticking with it. Because, again, it has been a challenge. We still have challenges ahead of us, although we can turn the corner. But it's something that that I think would be good for everybody to know about. On another note, I just got an email from a colleague. There is the governor just issued a press release earlier, and basically there is a down in the valley, they've established a COVID-19 therapeutic infusion center in Harlingen to treat outpatient cases of COVID. And the deal is there's this drug that will allow you to do testing at home and treatment. It's something that they have been working on for some time. I sent it to Shelley to send it to the folks down in the valley, but I'd heard about it, you know, months ago that that there's something coming that it'll allow everybody at home to do their own testing, and there's some sort of treatment that can go along with that until you can get the vaccine. But anyway, that's forthcoming. I'll send that to you, Mike, for you to look at, and you can discern how you want to share it with folks or whether you want to share it at all, but it's kind of big news. And so I thought that was something pretty significant because we're talking about the vaccine, but there's also this whole deal about you still need to get tested and treated, especially for folks who have gotten the vaccine, want to come into the office and are concerned about, is everybody else in the office also, have they got the vaccine and stuff? So I'll share that with you, and you can kind of work through that as well. But I think this is, in closing, I think this has been a great year for us overall. I think it's shown our intestinal fortitude, our creativity, our real leadership skills. It just shows who we are as an agency to be able to not just survive through a 100-year pandemic, but also to reach the level of achievement that we have in the various areas that we have. Because, again, it's pretty remarkable to take, you know, an agency of our size, 250 people, have them go work remotely and still be able to accomplish everything we've been able to accomplish and almost operate seamlessly. And in the process, have very few people contract COVID or get it or die from it. And then more importantly, to get laid off. Everybody still has a job and everybody still get paid. We were able to not only pay people, but we were able to give them two little small little bonuses in the process. So what we've been able to do, it's, I would say, has been miraculous, but it's a testament to the commitment and the ingenuity, creativity, and just the compassion of our management team and the employees themselves showing up every day, continuing to work, continuing to move forward, and not thinking about themselves, but thinking about those they serve with and those who they serve. And so with that, I'm going to turn to my fellow colleagues on the board, give you each opportunity to say your a word or two before I say Merry Christmas and sign off to everybody. So I'll start with Tyra, since you're up on the top to my right.
Oh. Well, I can only say ditto to everything you've said, but I really want to give my personal thanks to all of the staff, the leaders that are here today, but those who are not as well, because I just found it so absolutely amazing that everything that happened in that list, Sylvia, is quite something. Everything that has happened because of people willing to adapt and learn new things and sacrifice, and I just found it really, really exciting. And I know I make noise a lot. Sometimes it's good noise, and it's like what this said, good trouble, and sometimes it's bad trouble. But I think we all know that we're caring about the people who we serve, and especially the kids, because their future is in our hands right now, and we really want to see them do well. But I just cannot thank you enough, and I'm going to continue to make noise as long as I can, and I want all of you to have a wonderful, wonderful holiday, blessed holiday, safe holiday. And next year, we're going to just look for new things to do, because I think we're going to have license to do a lot more next year than we were able to this year. So thank you, thank you. And Merry Christmas. Feliz Navidad y próspero año nuevo.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
I guess since I'm on the top line, I ought to be able to say something.
Go, Chuck.
I'm on the left side where we're being left-handed and kind of leftist thinking sometimes. I thought about trying to end the year with some esoteric, unanswerable question, but I don't think I'll do that. I want to commend Mike for the work he's done this year. It's just I can't imagine having a job like you've had and then have this pandemic come sweeping in, do without something like that, and you've handled it masterfully. And beyond that, Merry Christmas and stay safe.
Okay.
All right, next.
I keep talking. I can come up with some questions, but
Mary.
Yes. Thank you all so much, Mr. Gerber, Sylvia, everybody up there, and all the staff from admissions to maintenance. Deeply appreciated from this resident and lots of residents that I know of. So thank you, thank you, thank you, and have a Merry Christmas and a very, very happy new year, and stay safe.
You know how much we love you. You're the commissioner who gives us the most hell, but you're the most fun to work with.
I thought that was Tara, but Mary, I guess you get the staff.
You know, but having someone who so deeply cares about the residents and advocates for them, I mean, we've been able to go so much deeper in the things we do because of the insights of you, Commissioner Apostolo, and you know, you've balanced some really tough things really well, and just we're just so grateful to you, really.
Can I pipe in again? Because Mary has been so generous in allowing people to come through her apartment, strangers, etc. And I just don't know how she does it, but she manages to do it with a huge smile and just wonderful, wonderful personality. Mary, thank you so much for being our showcase.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
And on that note, I'll just give one more comment, then I'll turn to Edwina. One of the things I think has been great about us as an agency, individually, as well, is the one, being open and being patient. That has allowed us to grow as an agency and individually, because I just think about all of us on this call, how we, before this pandemic, probably were not nearly as astute as we are now on how to use technology. And this has forced us to grow, forced us to learn, forced us to get out of our comfort zones. And I think, you know, there are a lot of bad things about this pandemic, but sort of the good thing is I think it has pushed us out of our comfort zones, helped us to grow, helped us to learn. We're smarter, stronger, and better all around for it, both individually and as an agency as a whole. And so, and that's because everybody's been open like Mary. Mary opened up her house for folks to come in. I mean, I brought in strangers from different countries into her house, and Mike has brought in people from different states and everything. But again, it goes to the openness that we've all had in working with each other, trusting each other, and being patient with each other. And with that, Edwina, I will let you have it. You are mute now. You got to get off of mute. You're still on mute.
Thank you, Chairman Ritchie. Yesterday at the holiday party, you know, I was reminded of the fact that leadership begins at the top. Leadership absolutely begins at the top. And Mike has put together an extraordinary executive team. I think most everybody on the executive team has been at the agency for quite some time. But it seems by allowing them or putting them in the, as he calls it, the E-team position, it's really allowed the staff and the executive team to use their skills, to be able to contribute, and I hope to feel really good about what they're doing. After I love the videos. I mean, I love the all aboard video yesterday. I just thought that was fabulous. As was the one last summer with everybody in their signs and we're all in this together and their pets and their husbands and wives. And I mean, I watched that multiple times and every time I watched it, I almost cried. Because I was just so pleased to be a part of what you all are doing. And having been one commissioner or a commissioner here who's been in public service for a lot of my life, I mean, I recognize how hard your jobs are. And they're hard without pandemics. So I commend you all with what you've done. I'm so pleased to be a part of this organization. And happy holidays, Merry Christmas. And you ought to see my board book. It's a mess. So I apologize for being a little bit out of order today. But I know that this is a very forgiving group. And by January, you will have forgotten it. So... thank you all, and I think a special thanks, I mean, to Andrea for her patience with everyone as we are working through these issues with trying to be virtual. So, thank you, Mike. Thank you, executive team. Take some time off.
Thanks so much, Edwina, And I would also mention, Mr. Chairman, that, thanks for our legal counsel, Wilson Stoker from Coconos, who does a great job. Wilson, I don't think we violated too many laws today. Thank you for your steadfastness. And as I shared with all of you, I wondered how the transition from someone with the deep institutional knowledge that Wilson's predecessor had, would go. And I think Wilson is really, not missed a beat. I would say to all of you, he certainly has worked through some challenging issues with the board this year, but he's worked through even more challenging issues with the staff as we've worked through stepping up on tenant and landlord issues. He's really done a great job leveraging the resources of his firm to serve the interests of this agency, and we feel very confident as an executive team in the work that Wilson's doing. So, Wilson, thanks for what you're doing, and appreciate you very much.
Thank you for saying that. I really appreciate the relationship and love working with everybody on this call and in the agency. I really do. Thank you for saying that.
Sure. And as a gift to us, Coconuts is going to give us this meeting free, so we appreciate that too.
Is that a for real, Mike?
Mike, I know you always got to ask. That's your fiduciary responsibility.
Well, on that note, again, I want to just say Merry Christmas and Feliz Navidad. Happy New Year to each and every one of you all. Hopefully you'll get a chance to get a little breather before we begin with 2021. I think, Edwina, you got something you want to say?
One more thing as we talk about leadership. Thank you, Chairman Ritchie, for the leadership that you have provided to us as commissioners and to Mike as chair of the board of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's my honor to serve with each and every one of you all. Each and every one of you all are rock stars. You have led and have led other major organizations. You're capable of certainly leading this one, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to lead this organization and to, again, work with you to have your trust. And again, whether I'm here or not, I just know that we are in very capable hands with all five of us. Everybody brings something a little different to the table. We all ask very probative questions of Mike and the staff and of each other. But I think it makes us better as an organization and better as an individual. So it's just an honor for me to be able to be here and be with you all. And again, for me, this is a joy. It's a service. It's an opportunity for me to give back to an industry that was very good to me and my family during a very dark period in my personal life. So it's an honor for me to be able to give back and to help families who were similarly situated as mine. So. It's my joy.
Thank you.
So you're ready to be a motion to adjourn, yeah.
So with that, I will adjourn. Go ahead.
So move.
There's a motion by Commissioner Carrington.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Any discussion? Hearing none, the motion carries, and we are officially adjourned at 2:48. P.M. on Thursday, December 17th. Everybody be safe, be happy, and I look forward to seeing you in January.
Merry Christmas.
Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas, everyone.